Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us at the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. You can also find us at the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check out our pages, including our gift page, which has some great, wonderful organizations and charities that would need your support and would greatly appreciate it. You also check out our sponsor page, which is looking to increase as well. And if you're listening here now live or on Twitter or on the archives, go to your Twitter account and just put in listening to Bard's Logic and then put in hashtag PJNet and then copy and paste in the link. So just there for Twitter users, put in listening to Bard's Logic, and then actually copy and paste the link in first, and then put the hashtag PJNet in. Now tonight, join our guest, Adrian Wiley, and myself, the host, with panelists Cindy Todd and Kelly Mordecai. Normally we have Dan Gregg, but he will be working with Operation American Spring, getting ready for the event coming up this weekend on the 15th. I think that we shall be doing a show on the 17th of May with folks giving us live reports from Operation American Spring from Washington, D.C., and that will be at a special time at 3:30 p.m. on Saturday the 17th. We'll also hear from our other panelist, who is the founder of Overpasses for America. That is James Neighbors. He will also be calling in with Colonel Riley, who is the founder of Patriots of America, as well as at the forefront at the Operation American Spring. So we're looking forward to that. So join us and join our roundtable discussion. So tonight, Bard's Logic welcomes Florida gubernatorial Libertarian candidate Adrian Wiley, and we will discuss his campaign and his view on civil liberties, economic and social issues. And the question for tonight is, are abortion and marriage still important for liberty in America and the American culture? Considering the NDAA, the Patriot Act, and the Bundy Ranch situation, and how recent requests to censor alternative media, how important are social issues in winning an election? Now, Mr. Wiley, our guest, is an active community leader and has served on several committees and boards in Florida and as a volunteer youth sports coach for over a decade. He also served as chairman of the Libertarian Party of Florida and is co-founder of the 1787 Radio Network and the president of an IT consulting firm. And so without any further ado, we will bring in our guest, and that is Mr. Wiley. Thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Great, Robert. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. What we do here is we have folks who are audience to the show, and they request to have certain people on or give me links to contact folks to have them on the show, and that's what happened here. So it's appreciate you coming on as well. So we'll go ahead and start off. I see you got about an hour with you. Now we have our panelist, Kelly, on the line, so I'm sure you'll have some comments, questions, too, because he is a libertarian as well. And so first, and I ask this of all the candidates, the first question is, what prompted you to run for the governor of Florida, and why did you choose to run with the Libertarian Party?
Well, I'll answer the second part first. I'm a longtime Libertarian. I became a Libertarian when I was about 21 years old, when somebody handed me the world's smallest political quiz, and I'm sure some of your listeners will be familiar with that. I took the quiz, and sure enough, I found out I was a Libertarian, and I realized why I didn't really fit with either of the two major political parties. So I've been involved with the Libertarian Party for a very long time, and the reason I decided to run is I got angry, quite frankly. I got tired of watching our country be destroyed by the ruling elite, so to speak. And, you know, I am a proponent of the Tenth Amendment. I am a proponent of the concept of nullification. I believe that if we are going to restore our constitutional republic, it's going to be done through the states. So that's why I chose to run for the position of governor, that we can use that power of the Tenth Amendment to ensure that we nullify so much of this federal overreach.
So good, and there's a lot of folks, even on the conservative side as well, that would like to see that. We've talked about that in other times in the show. And so your website lists a good number of issues, and I believe there's about 15 of them. Which of those are the most important to you, let's say the top three issues, and why?
Well, if I had to pick the most important issues right now, I think that our economy is critical. Now, that is one of those areas I believe that most of our economic malaise is due to our currency system, due to the practices of the Federal Reserve System, and due to the fact that we do not have a free market capitalist system here in America. We have some strange hybrid of crony corporatism with elements of both socialism and fascism interwoven. So one of my objectives as governor is to do everything possible on a state level to restore some of that free market economy. And contrary to popular belief, there are a lot of things that a state can do, and much of that is specifically with following the Constitution. So getting the economy back on track is a major component of that. Now, also, I am very much concerned about the encroaching police state. There are so many areas where we are losing our civil liberties via militarization of police, via things like the National Defense Authorization Act and the Patriot Act and things of that nature. And I'm currently personally involved in a battle against Real ID, I'm fighting through the criminal court system right now. So those are probably the two main areas which I see a full frontal assault from the federal government that needs to be stopped at the state line.
And I'm looking at your site as we speak. What about two issues I'm going to talk about here, and that's education, or ask you about here, so that's education and entitlements. Perhaps
right.
This can even be put one in the same in some ways. But tell us what your thoughts are on those two issues.
Well, you know, when we look at education, the default position of so many in government and so many people is that we need to spend more money, and that is simply not the case. We currently spend $12,000 per student per year, K through 12 in Florida. You can't tell me that at spending $12,000 per student per year, that we can't afford band, we can't afford the arts, we can't afford music, we can't afford sports, and that teachers have to go and buy classroom materials out of their own pocket. The problem is that money is being wasted, mismanaged through all these layers of bureaucracy. That is something that we can do. In the state here, we can get that money, keep that money local. We can actually spend less and end up achieving more funding for the classroom, where the money needs to belong. The second component of education is Common Core. Common Core is basically the federal takeover of our school system, not just the curriculum, but also the indoctrination, the biometric cataloging of our kids from a very young age, and it's terribly, terribly alarming. And I intend to do everything in my power to nullify and reverse Common Core. The other two candidates in this race are both supporters of it. And as far as entitlements go, you know, Medicaid, for example, approximately one-third of the entire state budget. It's in the $20 billion range that we're spending on Medicaid. And we can actually cut that. It's not a sacred cow. We can cut that, and we can cut it in much the same way we would, you know, be cutting other areas of the budget. Get rid of the fraud. Get rid of the waste, the redundancy, the bureaucracy. For example, I'm sure a lot of folks have seen those billboards where it says, this emergency room waiting time is only 3 minutes. Don't wait. Come by our ER. And I always thought that was an odd thing to advertise, wait times for an emergency room. If I need to go to the emergency room, chances are I'm not driving around to see who has the best wait time. Chances are I'm on a gurney bleeding out in the back of an ambulance. But that's because I'm someone who pays for my own health care, pays for my own health insurance, and I think most of your listeners probably feel the same way. However, with Medicaid, we've set up a scenario where the best approach for someone on Medicaid is when they have a cold or a sniffle or a sore throat or a stubbed toe, they go to the emergency room. The end result is the state of Florida gets a bill for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for something that could easily be handled in a doctor's office or a walk-in clinic for, you know, $50 or $100. So if we were just to take a practical look and not looking at these programs like, oh, you can't cut these ever under any circumstances, well, yes, we can. If we're just getting rid of the waste, we're getting rid of the bureaucracy, we can cut them by as much as 30%. And people aren't going to really feel the impact because we won't be cutting into the critical government services.
And what about, and I don't see this on your site, actually, and I think, you know, Medicaid has a link with it. What about immigration?
Well, immigration constitutionally, there's not much that the state can do. That is one of the areas that is specified in Article 1, Section 8 as a power of the federal government. However, you know, it's really a difficult situation to be in. I support the idea of...
Yeah, Florida's got a lot. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I say I support the idea of enforcing federal laws on a state level.
They're greatly affected by both, you know, by illegal immigration.
I'm sorry, say that again.
So Florida is one of those, you know, states that is greatly affected by illegal immigration.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I think any state that is on the border is going to be affected by it dramatically. You know, that really is an issue that's predominantly in the national realm. For example, even if it was the position of the state of Florida to arrest anyone they identify as within the country illegally, they can only be held for 72 hours. And then, you know, if Immigration and Customs doesn't pick them up or decide to pick up the case at that point, then the state has to release them. So it's a weird situation that we're in with immigration. And, you know, I really believe that for the most part, that's an issue that we're going to have to handle on the federal level, according to the Constitution.
Okay, fair enough. So we'll move on to why do you think it's important for there to be more than just two parties? Of course, we talked about the Democrat and Republican parties running for a particular office.
Well, ideally, in a perfect world, I believe there should be no parties. I think several of our founders warned us about the dangers of political parties. But if we're going to have that system, I want to see a situation where no party has the majority. Think about if there were no majority in Congress. We wouldn't have this constant back and forth. The other component of that is in this day and time, I really believe that the two parties have merged into a single party. Other than the rhetoric they espouse on the campaign trail, there's no fundamental difference between the two parties. When they get into office, they both expand government, they both spend more money, they both put us further into debt, and they both infringe upon our civil liberties. So as far as the true benchmarks of what government should be doing, there's virtually no difference between Republicans and Democrats in office.
Yeah, actually, I think, was there more? I didn't want to interrupt you. Is there more you want to put on that? Okay. Well, what I was going to say is, you know, I think that's a good segue to the next question I have here. As many would say, the Libertarian Party has many similarities with the Republican Party. What do you say to folks who say that you were taking votes away from the party that has the most chance to get accomplished with the libertarians would like to see?
Well, you know, I have to disagree with you there respectfully on the premise that the Republicans would actually do anything to solve the problem. I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm just saying that's what I said many would say. Because I hear that on the show a lot, you know, people calling in and saying you're taking votes away from the Republican Party, where since it's what they would consider a major party, those would be the ones you'd put your vote for, because that would be the most likely to get, you know, as I said, politically, legislatively, things passed that more closely resembles what the libertarians would like to see done, more so than the Democrats. I'm not saying those outside have said that on the show.
Sure, a little devil's advocate there. Anyone who says that, I would challenge the premise. And the reason I would challenge that premise is because, for example, it wasn't too long ago where the Republicans held both houses of Congress and the presidency, and during that time we saw, at the time, record spending, record debt. We got the Patriot Act. We got major infringements on our civil liberties. We got TARP, which was the first round of the bank bailouts. So really, I don't see a fundamental difference. I mean, I know they talk like good conservatives, like Rick Scott, for example, in the Florida race. Rick Scott, tries to tout himself as a fiscal conservative, but while he's been in office, he has increased the state budget by nearly $9 billion in 3 years. So I don't know how you can have any illusion that Republicans are fiscal conservatives. The same token, Democrats have had their opportunity, but yet, the party that's supposed to be anti-war and supposed to be pro-civil liberties has been a willing participant in everything from, drone strikes on American citizens to indefinitely detaining U.S. citizens without charges and trial. So you really can't say that either party does what they are supposedly known for. And that goes back to the concept that there is no difference between the party. But the interesting thing is, even though there is, especially among Tea Parties and Patriot groups, and I speak to a lot of them, there is a belief that libertarians draw more from Republicans and Democrats. Now, the polls don't really bear that out. In my race, for example, we're polling within 1.5% Republicans and Democrats. So we're pulling statistically the same amount from both Republicans and Democrats, but we're pulling a huge number of independent, no party affiliation voters. And the reason that is because those people have realized that neither party represents them. They're looking for someone who does represent them, and libertarians are offering that solution. So I can tell you, in the races that we've analyzed around the country where libertarians have performed well, they are pulling statistically equally from Republicans and Democrats in most cases.
And we'll discuss, hopefully we'll have time to discuss why you think that is, and perhaps that will be part of the answer to one of the later questions. But I've read that you'll be appearing in the gubernatorial debate on October 15th, at, I think, Broward College. Tell us how your campaign team accomplished that feat.
I really can't say that the campaign team accomplished it per se. We were actually ready for a fight, legal fight necessary, to get into the debate. And then out of the blue, we get an invitation. I think what happened there is we have just an army of amazing grassroots volunteers. And they have been, just working so hard to ensure this happened. They've been calling, they've been writing, they've been contacting all the major pollsters, all the major media throughout the state, and just, working hard to get this done. So I really think that the main factor in me being included in the debates is the hard work of so many people that support this campaign, not because of me, not because of anything else other than the fact that they're looking for someone who shares their values. And it's not that leading this charge. It's just that so many people out there want economic freedom, want individual liberty. They know the Republican and Democrat, regardless of what they say, aren't going to deliver it. And they know libertarians will get government out of their wallets, out of their bedroom, and out of their business. And that's what people are looking for. And when the people see that there is an opportunity to achieve that through the ballot box, they're going to work for it. And that's what we're seeing. And I can't thank the volunteers enough for all the amazing work they've done.
Well, man, that's awesome because, you know, we, you know, kind of dubbed the show the Grassroots We the People show. So it's I'm very satisfied to hear that that was something that came from the grassroots up to get you to get in that, that debate. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing the power that people have when they just, you know, start making a little noise. And people are really making noise right now. And it's so refreshing because I was talking to some folks today, and they were actually discouraged. You know, they were saying so many people are still asleep. So many people haven't seen what's really going on out there. And, you know, I have to say I've seen the opposite. I am so encouraged because I've been, you know, for so many years I've been talking to people trying to explain this, and it seems like within the past couple of years people are very receptive to it. They're seeing it too. They're personally being affected. So that grassroots is just exploding and really ready, I believe, to change the political structure in this country away from the oligarchy and back to the people.
That's a great description. That's what we kind of call it here, where the president, especially as an example with Barack Obama, has become like the new king, and the politicians become the oligarchy, and we know that what that leaves we the people, and that kind of leaves us as the serfs, serving to the politicians instead of them doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that's serving the people. So definitely,
yeah.
We've used that analogy definitely before on the show about them becoming the new oligarchy. And speaking of grassroots, I just want to remind folks that this Saturday at 3:30 p.m., so it'll be a special day and time of Bard's Logic Political Talk, we will have Dan, who will not be with us tonight because he's preparing for Operation American Spring in Washington, D.C. This weekend. And James will not be joining us tonight either because he is going to be working on things for that as well. But they did want to say hello to everyone and the folks, and they're looking forward to speaking with them on Saturday. If you're going to be in D.C. for Operation American Spring, maybe you'll get the chance to say hello to Dan. And he said shake his hand, he'll be happy to talk with folks. And so check us out this Saturday, the 17th, at the special day and time at 3:30 p.m., and that's Eastern Time. So we're going to go, we're almost to the bottom of the hour, which goes pretty quick here on the show, so we'll move along and go to the focus of tonight's show, which is on social issues. And I'm presuming you're contending, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, that, if, you know, as you mentioned, your top priorities is one of them. And on your site, you say you're pro-life. However, it's not a top priority for our nation or the campaign. Why do you believe this is the case? And do you think the issues of abortion and marriage are indicative of our American culture?
Well, you know, I am a Christian and a man of very deep faith, but I look at it differently as an elected official. In my personal life, you know, I follow Christ's teachings. I look through the prism of God in my personal life. If an elected official, I have to look at it through what authority the government has. Do they have the authority to dictate to people how they're going to live their lives? Now, marriage and abortion are two very uniquely separate issues. Let's start with marriage. I am not necessarily pro-gay marriage. My position is that government lacks the authority to license marriage. I believe that marriage is a fundamental right of association. So my position would be, let's just get government out of the business of marriage altogether. And I look back at it. I've been married for 23 years to my beautiful wife, Dawn, and it still infuriates me that 23 years ago, I had to go to the government permission via a license in order to marry the woman I loved. That doesn't seem right to me. And if it's not right for one person, it shouldn't be right for anyone. So my position is the government just lacks the authority to tell people whom they can and can't marry. Now, churches would have the ultimate decision on whom they do or do not want to perform marriage ceremonies for. But everything else that a marriage license implies could be done through a simple legal document, beneficiary, survivorship. Those are all legal aspects. So it's not as if it requires the state's blessings to handle the legality of it. And as far as the ceremonies, that's the realm of the church. That's not the realm of government. Now, on the abortion issue, that is amazingly complex because it's the one scenario in all of the human existence where the rights of two individuals cannot be separated. And at some point, the rights of one or the other have to prevail. Now, I believe that means you have to set a demarcation where up until this point, the rights of the mother prevail. After that point, the rights of the child prevail. And I think the only fair way to do that is the point of viability. And my position is prior to the point of viability, it is the woman's right to choose. After the point of viability, it is the duty of the state to protect the life of the child. So there, to me, there's a clear demarcation there where the rights of one or the other takes precedence. So that's basically my position. I would never support late-term abortion, never support partial birth abortion, and never support any public funding for abortion.
Okay, but being pro-life, as you say, you are, wouldn't one of the, and being Christian, wouldn't that, and I know you want to, you're trying to separate, I don't know if that's even possible or should be possible for someone to be able to separate their political life, you know, the political ideologies, which with their moral ideologies, because they said, in order for a nation to be successful, it should be a moral nation, and if we can't find a way to protect the most vulnerable and innocent among us, I mean, how can we stand to protect any of us, especially when the first, in the Constitution, is life, liberty, the right to life is the very first thing in the Constitution.
Right, and that's why it's so important that we define life, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. But, I look at it from a different perspective. I look at the way that Christ went about trying to change man's heart. He didn't do it through law. He didn't do it through the force of government. He did it by inspiring, by leading, by that method. I don't believe that you can change a person's heart with a law. Ever. And, Christ said, come to me like a child. When we're doing, we're trying to enforce morality through law, that's not what we're doing. We're basically only affecting a person's actions, and they're only limiting their actions out of fear of repercussion. We're not doing anything to actually make those people moral. We're not doing anything to change their hearts.
All laws are like that. I mean, all laws, in a sense, is dictating or legalizing, certain morals.
To some degree, you're right. But there also is the situation where, for example, I base a lot of my philosophy on the non-aggression principle. Do no harm. You should be free to do what you choose so long as you do not harm or infringe upon the rights of another. And gay marriage falls perfectly into this scenario. Two individuals of the same gender being married is not harming anyone in any way, in my opinion. Now, by the same token, the freedom of the association works both ways. If there is a church, a group, or what have you, that doesn't want to associate with married gay couples, they should have the right to do that as well. So you see what I'm saying? It really boils down to government doesn't have the authority to tell us how to live our lives so long as we're not harming anyone else. And that's the bottom line for me as far as what the role of government in life is. And again, I do separate the role of government versus the role of faith in my life.
So what would you say, and bring this, what do you say the role of government is?
The life, liberty, and property of the people that it serves.
Okay, and that's where you said earlier that, and we'll move on a little bit, but this, as I said, this be the folks this will be discussing tonight, is, I almost lost my train of thought there. I'm sorry about that. I've been battling migraines for 2 days, so I must apologize today for that.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
That little lapse. Oh, I they're genetic. I get them on a pretty frequent basis, actually. You just have to learn how to live through them. Just the past couple of days have been worse than others. But anyway, when you mentioned, you know, see, that's real big with, you know, folks in the show is, you know, you mentioned the life part. And when do we, you know, say, because some people, we had James Carr on. He's running for the Libertarian Party as well. And he was talking about, you know, when is life? Now, some would say, especially Christians would say that it's at the moment of conception. And if we're protecting life, when it is life, and by the, you know, that definition, would you suggest that we need to have a legal definition of life? And if so, if that is the case, what would you do if we leave the abortion issue to the states? What would you do to you know, promote that we have a a legal definition of when life begins?
Well, currently, as you know, Roe v. Wade specifies that. But, you know, I do believe that it should be a state's issue. It should not be a federal government issue. Murder, for example, is a state issue. It's a state crime, state penalty. So should abortion. It should be placed in that regard. But I do believe that in protecting the life and liberty of individuals, my mark is, you know, the fetal viability. When the child can survive outside the womb, that to me is the beginning of life.
Okay, well, that's kind of a slippery slope when you think, because if we talk about, you know, viability and if something is able to take care of, you know, its own or something of that nature, what if that, you know, can also become more of a euthanasia as well? Because what if someone, you know, cannot take care of themselves anymore? Would that be something where, you know, what if the government
I absolutely would not support that, nor do I define it. But you have to understand that, you know, it's a different issue. I don't think there's any justification for euthanasia under any circumstances, unless it's the wishes of that individual. You know, I do believe that if you own your own life, you do have the right to end it the way you see fit. That's a decision that only that person can make, however. So I don't see it that way. But I just believe that we have to set a fixed point where life begins. And really, that's only the issue here. We all agree that it is the duty to protect the life of the unborn. It's just a question of when that starts.
I'm glad you said that. So at what point, and as a Christian, you believe that's at the beginning of conception. So as governor, and it being a state, you know, a state issue, abortion being a state issue, would there be something that you would do to promote, you know, defining by law that conception would be the point of life, of when life begins?
No, because my personal belief is, a government official looking at definitions that I interpret from our founding documents, I would say no. I don't think I could go that route. I think at some point we do have to say that the liberty of the woman does prevail.
Why couldn't you do that?
I'm just saying I would personally. I'm not saying that you couldn't. If it were a state issue, it would be up to the state to decide. I'm just saying I personally would not.
Right, and I'm just asking, why would you not pursue that if that's what, I mean, by definition, by science, and if it is a state law and it should be left up to the states on whether to legalize or illegalize abortion, and that being the key issue is when life begins, why not pursue or at least promote that being done? Excuse me.
Because, like I said, I believe the only fair way to do it is at the point of viability.
Okay, and why is that fair?
I think I've described it repeatedly. Is there a specific component of this that, you know, you're having trouble with?
I'm sorry?
I mean, I understand that we have a fundamental disagreement here. But my position is my position.
Okay. No, we got that. And so I see we've got Kelly here on the line, so I'm going to open up his mic. He's a libertarian as well. Welcome to the show, Kelly. How are you?
Hey, doing good. I'm oh, what do you know? Surprise, surprise. We have another libertarian on the show. welcome, sir. I've been a libertarian, well, I think all my life, actually, but I got out of the donkey elephant game back in 2004, finally joined up, went to the 2012 National Convention, two state conventions, and I'm hearing the same themes that I'm hearing from libertarians, which is bigger picture, they absolutely love the Constitution, they want smaller government, this party's filled with them. Of course, we have our recovering Democrats who love guns and realize that the Democratic Party isn't working. We have our recovering Republicans who realize that Republicans aren't changing things like they'd hope. But anyway, I wanted to discuss a little bit about the comment a little bit back, and then I want to, if I may, take you through a quiz. The 2013 governor election that was the a blame game by the Republicans. Well, it's libertarians that made us lose. Yeah, it was bad, bad, bad. And then even Rush Limbaugh got on that bandwagon. It was Ken Cuccinelli, if I said his name right, and the Democrat, Terry McAuliffe. Is that right? McAuliffe? Not McAuliffe Culkey, or to be confused with. but anyway... So what happened was it was 48 for Colley McAuliffe. I mean, I'm sorry, Terry McAuliffe, the Democrat, and it was 46 for Cuccinelli, the Republican. 48-46, a really close split. And then Sarvis had 7%. Wait a minute, 48 and 46 happens to be 94 and 7. I remember something. Somebody didn't do the math right. I'm looking at a Time, online Time article, and. What is stunning about this is that exit polls indicate that if the Libertarian governor candidate was not in the race, the Democrats would have won by a lot larger margin. The exit polls Time got a hold of was that two out of three would have voted Democrat if a Libertarian was not involved. So they shifted in that race a lot more votes from the Democrats than the Republicans, and they actually closed the gap for the Republicans, but the Republicans had to say went on the blame game. And then there was another factor in this, in the Libertarian National Committee and a few other, they noted, this is in that LP newsletter, a rich donor in Virginia funded heavily the Libertarian Party of Virginia to go after Hispanics. And they pulled an awful lot of Hispanic votes away from the Democrats. So this basis that, third party made the Republican lose is absolutely void in the last gubernatorial in Virginia. So I really wanted to comment on that, kind of really bring out some of the facts. And even nationwide, there's other polls indicating that it's splitting equally. So,
exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, you're there, obviously. Do you have some more insight on this?
Yeah, we're pulling, like I said, within the margin of error equally between Democrats and Republicans. But where we're really pulling huge is from independents and also people who are not necessarily the super voters, people who are have skipped out on an election or two because they've said there's no one I can vote for. And they're tired of voting for the guy that they hate less. So we're actually seeing a big rise in people who are re-energized to vote. And we think that's going to play a significant role in this and a lot of future elections. You know, when you consider that, elections, especially an off-year election, they may only draw 30% of the registered voters. So there's, you know, 70% of the people that are just sitting home. So we intend to tap into that, as well as drawing from both the Republicans and the Democrats. We intend to energize a whole bunch of people that haven't been given a reason to vote in the past.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, you know, there's another thing I wanted to get into, these social issues. And, well, you're listening to quite a number of people who are Gingrich or Santorum or Ron Paul. I was a big Ron Paul fan. I still am, actually. And, you know, we lean Christian, of course, many of us. So abortion is very dear to our hearts. And you made a statement, federal government doesn't belong in the pro-life or abortion issue. Can you expound on that a little bit, just on the federal level?
Yeah. Well, I look at it as, when it comes to the federal government, we, the people, granted the federal government certain limited powers. And everything that wasn't specifically granted to them in the Constitution is retained by the state and by the people. And that is clearly specified, and the rights are all retained by the people. That's clearly specified in the 9th and 10th Amendments. I look at these issues as there is no federal government authority for them to deal with that. And like I referenced before, you know, murder, for example, is a federal issue. So if we look at that and then we apply that to other issues like abortion, we realize that should be a state issue. But the Supreme Court intervened and, you know, basically it became a federalized issue. I think it should return to the states. And then if the state, for example, if the people of the state wanted to completely outlaw abortion here, we could do it through a ballot initiative. We could do a constitutional amendment. It's just my personal position that we have to balance that. And I think, you know, viability is a good balancing point.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this question about states. Then, suppose the voters of Virginia said, hey, we're pro-life. Would you support that?
Oh, sure.
On a state
absolutely.
Level.
Yeah, because if
cool.
that's what people want, then sure. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's cool because we're very much on the same page here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my biggest – it came to me after thinking about this for years, but it just was simple. Once you open the door for the federal government to issue laws in your personal moral life, you have just given the federal government an infinite check to grow into infinity because there are so many personal choices, and the states, even how our country is set up, but it's real simple. It, you open the door to infinite growth. You know, marriage or not, gay marriage, whatever, homosexual, you know, abortioners about, we went over the show about states' rights and, you know, we discussed about a dozen different issues, and you let the federal government in your womb, your bedroom, or your vein, you have just given the federal government the ability to grow to infinity, and that's what's happening, and it's spooky.
You're exactly right, and I think there are so many more issues that should be handled on a state level, but one of the things that is the problem with how states are governed currently, most of them anyway, is that you don't have people in office on a state level that are willing to stand on the amendment. And this other side of the equation is you don't have states that have the financial stability and the fiscal restraint to reject the federal funding. And that's essentially what the federal government does. They take our money via taxes, send it to Washington, then they use it to bribe state governments into surrendering the rights of the people. So we have to have the fortitude to not only reject the federal usurpations, but also reject the federal funding that buys that power within the states. Most of the things that we see now, whether it's Obamacare, whether it's Common Core, whether it's Real ID, you name it, the federal government actually creates a guideline, but it's up to the states to actually implement it. The reason that is the federal government knows they do not have the constitutional authority to actually implement these things on a federal scale. It takes the buy-in of the states. How they do this is they say, well, if you don't do that, you're not going to get your Medicaid dollars. If you don't do Common Core, you're not going to get your Race to the Top money. If you don't get Real ID, you're not going to get your transportation money. And what to do is we have to put ourselves in a sound enough fiscal position in order to be able to reject that. And that requires cutting the budget. And that's why I intend to cut the budget by 30%.
Wow. Wow. I like the way you're thinking regarding protecting your state. I mean, I like Old Town Alexandria. I used to live in Maryland. A really neat place, Torpedo Factory, if you ever saw that museum.
No, I haven't been there.
Oh, it's just really neat. It's right on the waterfront, Potomac River. Hey, yeah, I want to go ahead and take you through a quiz, and I bet you're going to do really well.
Okay.
Okay, this is the state's rights. I call it the state sovereignty quiz. All right. So here we go. We'll try to get through these pretty quick. All right, true or false? The Delaware coin reads the first state, 1787. Delaware became a state in 1787. True or false?
It couldn't have because it wouldn't have been until the entire Constitution was ratified.
Year, this is multiple choice. What year did the 13 colonies become states? Multiple choice, A, 1776, B, 78, C, 1787, or D, 1788?
The 13 colonies... the Constitution was obviously written in 1787. It, you know, if I had to pick a number, I would have said 1791 because that's when it was fully ratified. But I'll go with 1787 on that one.
Okay. True or false?
Well, hang on a second. Let's go back to the other one. I guess under the Articles of Confederation, they were still technically considered states at that point.
Yes, they were. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me read.
Yeah, so,
okay, 76, 78, 87, or 88? Which year?
I'll go with 78.
78?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is tougher than I thought it'd be.
No, there's a point. There's a big point in this whole discussion. And you've already got the theme, but there's a big point in it. I'm just proving it through history. All right. True or false? In this country, we have a system of dual sovereignty, states versus feds.
Dual sovereignty?
Mm-hmm.
I would have to go with three-way sovereignty, federal, state, and individual.
Libertarians do this all the time, and it's beautiful, because once you understand your individual rights, you start realizing, well, the state can do something, but not too much. The feds, no way.
Yeah, so I'm going to say false on that one because individual wasn't included.
Okay. No, this is good. This is classic libertarian, all right? Because if you know who you are, you're very powerful. You know your rights, you're politically very powerful. If you know history to back it up, you'll understand why our country is set up the way it was.
Right.
All right. Number four, multiple choice. How many colonial legislatures approved a state constitution prior to July 4th of 1776? A, 2, D, 4, 6, or 8 colonies?
This one I absolutely do not know.
Yes, 2, 4, 6, or 8 colonies, and their colonial legislature had a state constitution approved.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 4, and that is a complete guess.
Okay. We're going to go over these when we get done here. Okay, how long did the Union of 13 States operate without an official name?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
How long did the Union of 13 States operate without an official name? 2 years, 4, 6, or 12 years?
I'm going to go with without an official name. I'm going to go with 12 on that one.
12?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And again,
false.
That's a bit of a guess. These are tough.
Yes, it's a gift again. That's okay. There's a really powerful point when we get through this. All right. True or false? In 1783, King George of England acknowledged the statehood status of the 13 original colonies.
1783.
Yes.
Hmm.
I'll give you a hint. Treaty of Peace.
Okay. I'll go true on that one.
True? All right. True or false? If only 8 states ratified the Constitution, The Articles of Confederation would have remained in effect until a constitution was properly ratified.
That would be false. Because it took, would that be 3/4?
Yeah. We'll get to the answer. It takes 9, actually.
All right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, all right. So that would be true, then, in that case, yeah.
Yeah, it would. Okay, but, all right.
Yeah.
True or false, to amend the federal constitution, it takes 2/3 of the states ratifying an amendment.
Let's say it takes 2/3 to convene, 3/4 to ratify, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so I'll read it again. To amend the federal constitution, it takes 2/3 of the states ratifying an amendment.
No, I'm going to go with 3/4 on that, so false.
So that's false. All right, good. Okay, multiple choice. How long did the States United operate without the present constitutional government? 2, 4, 8, or 12 years?
It depends on if you're counting from the declaration or not. If that's the case,
you're so close,
it
would
be... Yeah. What were the choices again?
2, 4, 8, or 12 years.
It got to be 12 is the closest one I can get.
Yep, all right. All right. Thought question. Who created whom? Did the states create and authorize the federal government, or did the federal government create and authorize the states?
The states created the federal government. As I like to tell people on the contract, on the campaign trail, the Constitution is simply a contract between the states.
It's a treaty, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, thought question. This goes back to social issues. All right, explain something first, then I'll ask the question. Many of the Founding Fathers held a strong faith in God and even penned divine providence and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence. Most read the Bible, several founders were ministers and didn't support abortion or homosexual marriage in their personal views. They could have put social issues into the Constitution to prohibit said social behavior. So here's the question. Why did the founders leave social issues out of the Constitution?
Well, I think they realized because it wasn't the realm of the federal government. I think they, by creating the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, they incorporated all that into the rights of the individual and the rights of the states. And the powers of the states, I should say.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'm stunned that they didn't even put any social issues and yet such faith in the federal constitution. All right, so we're going to go through this.
I don't want to be on some of those dates.
Yeah, well, history really empowers us when we know how our country was put together. Bottom line is they declared independence. They were a state on July 4th, 1776. Took them a war of 7 years, Treaty of Peace, 1783. Then they developed the Constitution. So anyway, all right, the first question, true or false, Delaware rare coin reads for state, 1787. Delaware became a state in 1787. That is absolutely false. Delaware became a state on July 4th, 1776. So did Massachusetts. So did Virginia. So did Pennsylvania, North Carolina, South Carolina. Okay, that answers number two. What year did the colonies, 13 colonies, become states? That was 1776. These United Colonies are a right, ought to be free and independent states. And that as independent states, they have full power to wage war, conclude peace, contract alliances, and to do all other acts and things which free and independent states may have right to do. It's right there in the Declaration. All right, so, 76. In this country, we have a system of dual sovereignty, states versus feds. You said three-way. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to give you a happy face on that one when you really think about it. But in Prince versus U.S., Scalia, which I'm a big fan of, Scalia said, in this country we have a system of dual sovereignty, states versus feds, to keep each other in check. Beautiful statement.
Yeah.
All right. How many colonial legislatures approved a state constitution prior to July 4th of 1776? The correct answer is 4. You guessed it. You got it right. Another happy face. All right. It started in January of 76. New Hampshire says, here's our Constitution. We are ready to lock and load and fight and be free. Breaking news story. And then along came South Carolina in March. They did the same thing. In June, Virginia. And then on July 2nd, it was Jersey, New Jersey. So four colonies, their colonial legislature, here's our state constitution. Let's go.
Right.
So, yeah, it was just amazing. So, all right, so you got that one right. How long did the Union of 13 States operate without an official name? Kind of a hard question. But when you understand the principle of July 4th, 1776, then we go to the Articles of Confederation, Article 1. Oh, by the way, Articles of Confederation was ratified in July 9th, 1778. So the correct answer is 2 years.
Okay.
They were bound together by our lives, our fortune, our sacred honor. They were unified. In the Articles, Article 1, this union of states shall be called the United States of America. Yeah, you might want to have a name, guys.
Yeah.
And number two in the Articles of Confederation, each state retains its own sovereignty, except what we have given to the Confederate government. And then Article 9 and 10 of the Bill of Rights say the same thing. Hey, anything not given to you, we still hold to. So that's kind of a hard one. But anyway, Eric, number six. In 1783, King George of England acknowledged the statehood status of the 13 colonies. That is true. You got it right. And it says in vis, which is a Latin something, you know, et sec, in continuum. And he listed all the 13 colonies acknowledged the statehood and hostilities were over. All right, number seven. Only eight states ratified. You got that correct. Wait. If only eight states ratified the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation would have remained in effect until a Constitution
right.
was properly ratified. The act was said false. The correct answer is true because it took nine states.
Oh, that's what I misunderstood. That's why I was asking the nine versus the eight. So I may have said
okay.
the wrong thing, but I do.
Okay. Well, I have to maybe I change that a little more clear question. All right. To amend the federal constitution, it takes two-thirds of the states ratifying an amendment. It actually takes three-quarters. You said false. There's another happy face. All right. To amend the constitution, you think that the creator should be consultable. That's the way the founders set it up. And, Ryan, how long did the states united operate without the present constitutional government? Well, 1776 to 1788, it's 12 years. And you got that one correct by – all right, another happy face. Who created whom? The states created the federal government. Absolutely. You got that one right. And I'm totally in agreement with you. The social issues do not belong in the hands of the federal government. That's the last question. Where I'm going with this whole conversation is I'm trying to help libertarians and anybody else who wants to say, look, okay, let's just sideline the issues, the social issues. Let's just sideline them on the federal level, okay? Because you have people that it's called the game. It's the donkey elephant game, okay? It's like, oh, I'm pro-life. Oh, I'm pro-choice. And they get elected in this, and then they go vote for the Patriot Act, the NDA, the bank bailout. We don't investigate the Federal Reserve. It's like these are circus sideshow issues, and it's disgusting that we're so focused on social issues that don't even belong in the hands of the federal government.
I concur.
And that's where I'm going with it.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Go ahead. Well, that's where I'm going with the conversation.
Right, and he's running for governor. We're talking about it being a state issue, and that's why I was, you know, trying to bring the subject to that. So go ahead, Kelly.
Well, yeah, and I really like your position that if the people of Virginia would vote pro-life, you would support them.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the will of the people.
Yeah, and that's the duty of the state. And so if there were a push in Florida a ballot initiative, for example, to amend the state constitution, then yeah, absolutely, that would be the will of the people. But I just want to, a side note, you know, this talk has brought something to mind. There's a push right now for a constitutional convention, Article 5 convention, which I am vehemently opposed to. And the reason being is when we look at history, we have to realize that the Philadelphia Convention of 1787, the Constitution of the United States, our the highest law of the land, actually came about by accident. That convention was called simply to amend the Articles of Confederation, and we walked out of there by scrapping the Articles of Confederation. You know, they suspended the rules, they decided to scrap the whole thing, and let's start over from scratch. My deepest fear, and I know a lot of your listeners probably support this, I want to let them know that once that is convened, even if the states say, we're only going to look at these issues, once it convenes, according to Article 5, that is a completely separate body that has the power to suspend the rules and can act in all intents and purposes. So that is a very dangerous thing. And if we go to an Article 5 convention, it's possible we come out with more freedom, but it's also possible that we come away with something more akin to the Communist Manifesto or Mein Kampf.
Right.
So it's very important that people understand the risks of such a convention. But I tell you, folks, I really have to go. I really appreciate you having me on tonight, though.
Okay, well, I want to throw out one last thought.
Thank you for coming to the show, and we'll be watching that campaign as it unfolds.
All right, thanks very
much.
I'm sorry to cut you short, but I've got another interview I've got to get on at 11:05.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, and you have a good evening.
All right, take care, guys.
You too. Take care.
Wow.
Well, tell me what you think. I mean, there's definitely some things that I agree with, especially in the beginning of the interview with the stances, of course, when it comes to the social issues and especially the abortion and the marriage issue. I want to get on more with the marriage and when children are involved and things of that nature, but you know, unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of time. I also wanted to ask him questions about what his thoughts were about what's going on there in Nigeria and with that terrorist group, Boko Haram, how they kidnapped these 200 girls. I wanted to see what he thought, if any, of U.S. involvement should be in that, but unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of time. I think the biggest problem, as I said, you know, I didn't agree with most of what he had to say, but one problem I did have, I must admit, is that, you know, when people get elected, you want to get, you know, you do it based on their principles. And if he has a principle of being pro-life and believes that life begins at conception, you would think he would fight harder on the state level as the governor to curtail the amount of abortions, you know, out there by, and he seems very opposed to the idea of even promoting, if not, I'm not saying starting, but even promoting the idea of having a legal definition of life for the states. Because if you want the states, the abortion issue to be in the hands of the states, which I think he clearly said that he did, then as the governor, you would think that there could be a fight for legalizing a definition of life, and he would be behind that, but he seemed like he wasn't. What do you think about that, Kelly?
Well, we kind of ferreted him out, if you will. We kind of put him through a filter. You know, I was listening and this and that, and when here's one of the problems I have with libertarians. You know, love them dearly because they love the Constitution. They go into such rhetoric and intelligence and complexity that I'm like, God, you guys aren't getting elected. You're just not. But one simple question, if Virginia went the way referendum, would you support it? He said, yeah. I'm like, put that on your campaign website, okay? You know, you can have a little disclaimer. You can write a whole thesis. Click here if you want to learn more. He's obviously not going to be pro. He's not going to be pro-abortion to get rid of it in Virginia. He certainly will not fund any abortions.
Right, which I appreciate that.
Right, but it's hard to get elected on such complexity, and it's frustrating that a third party has his problems, and I see it in the California platform, 27 pages long in the Constitution. You know, but I think I got to his heart, if you will, when I asked him point blank, would you support a referendum of pro-life? He said yes, which is a little bit different.
Kind of stuff to the, you know, up to the people, and then, you know, I could tell it was getting frustrating when I was trying to get wild. When I was trying to do, before I brought you on, and I didn't want to monopolize it, and I was finding myself getting ready to monopolize the conversation. And you know I don't do that here on the show. I do like to keep it open to the guests and to you guys, the panelists in the audience. And I figured that I was going to just monopolize on the conversation in question. So I pretty much stopped myself and got you in there before that happened. So, you know, because I just could have gone, you know, on and on. Cause we're definitely at a standstill there. But I just thought, as a person of principle, if you are against something, you would think you would use, what you can, frankly, to be able to get rid of, especially something that's so important as the abortion issue. But he just kept doubling back on what he said earlier. And in those instances, I don't know if, I mean, he said he answered the question, but I really don't think that he did. I think he kept going back on what he said earlier because he wouldn't really address on whether, you know, making a legal definition. And I would think someone who was a Christian and a, pro-life, that would be something that he would be interested in, but it appeared not. Now, that being said, I agree with a lot of what he said. He stood for, and that part of being a candidate, I would agree with. And he did have something on his website, who I believe the other two candidates he will be running with aren't going to touch the abortion issue either. So for going to, pick the candidate who would best suit, the rest of our concerns, I think he would be a good candidate on that point. I just really wish he would have as I said, with the issue of what we're talking about tonight, the social issues would be more, especially since he already agreed that it would be with, it would be up to the states that he would do more about it because, sometimes, for referendum and things of that nature, the idea of it could come from the people who are supposed to be the people's representatives.
Yeah, well,
and I do
have
someone here on Skype, and I do see you'd like to chime in, and we'll let you in on and Sue, but I want to get some more comments from Kelly. Go ahead.
Kelly, you mean, or the Skype guy?
Kelly. No, I'll get some comments from you, and then I'll bring the Skype person in.
Okay. All right. Well, I really like that he's going to stand up for the people of Virginia. I really like that. Feds, stay out, okay? He pulled a Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee, of course, we all know who he is. We studied a little bit of history. He was asked to be the general of the union. He said, nope. How Virginia goes, I will go. And he knew exactly what the founders had set up. And he will protect the people of Virginia. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I can't trust Republicans these days. If I was in Virginia, I'd vote for him. I know he's got that quirk about abortion in some people's minds. But
he's
how you...
Well, he's actually from Florida, not Virginia.
What, is he running in Florida or Virginia?
No, he was from Florida.
Oh, he's running in Florida then. Oh, gosh. That's
yeah, I was
so
wondering
high on my face.
Virginia, but...
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Okay, Florida. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no,
Florida.
That's okay. Well,
sorry.
We've had so many guests from different states. We've had Virginia, Pennsylvania, California, Florida, So we've had a lot of candidates from a bunch of different states. And we have had a number of candidates from multiple parties. From Virginia, I believe we even – no, that was Pennsylvania. We even had a Green Party guy on from Pennsylvania. I'm actually working on – I've got to see some poll results, some election results here to see if they were able to get on the ballot. But there's some folks here in Ohio who are actually running for the Green Party in Ohio, and I want to see – I'm hoping they got enough votes in order to be able to get on. So I think that the more parties on – a ballot, the better. I just think that's a better opportunity for representation of the people. So, Kelly,
if
you have any
more
comments, go ahead. If not, we'll be bringing in our caller.
Okay. Well, yeah, he's going to protect the people for it. I think that's pretty exciting. I want to talk a little bit about a quirk in the Libertarian Party and yet some advantages. It's a weird thing, but that's for later, I guess.
Okay. Well, then we've got some time. We've got at least 50 minutes of the live portion, and we may very well go into the extended version, or at least some, and see there we may not use the entire hour. But I will bring in the caller up on Skype. So thank you very much. Your mic is live. You can just give us your name and where you're from. We appreciate it.
Okay, good.
How are you?
I'm all right. My name's Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey. How do you answer the question if somebody asks you, well, it's supposedly a political truism that rising tide lifts all boats, but according to blacks and other minorities, that's not true. So how do you answer that?
Okay, first, Joe, where are you calling from?
Montana.
Montana? Okay, well, thank you very much. We get some folks from Montana, but I think you're one of the couple, so it's great to hear from someone from that state. So tell us a little bit more context on why you, you know, with that statement you made. I mean, you... We're all familiar with the term, but you're contending that that doesn't happen with minorities. So
right.
If you can elaborate more on that,
then
we can give you some answers.
To me, libertarian philosophy is practically brain dead, simple to understand. But there are people who do have an historical point of view in which they feel they're not going to be really integrated into the new utopia if libertarians take over the White House, take over Congress. They just don't believe us. So how would you answer that? If a black says to you, or a Mexican or an immigrant says, look, I understand the government's corrupt, but, you know, they're a good safety net. At least they have a safety net. What do you guys provide?
So with that, I'd ask them, so I'd like to be able to get more information, is through that statement or question, are you contending that the libertarians, if you had libertarians in power, that they would get rid of all the safety nets? Is that the contention?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what has the Libertarian Party in their platform or anything they said would make one to believe that's the case?
That's the way
they
believe. Okay. That's the way they believe. They don't like Democrats. They don't like Republicans. But they're voting Democrats because historically Democrats have provided the safety net. And even though some realize or a lot realize that it's becoming a nanny state, at least they get some sort of protection against unemployment, some kind of safety net against going homeless if, in case you have some sort of medical emergencies. So, again, how would you guys answer that particular type of question?
Sure. And here's all.
Well, we got to interject here. Yeah.
Oh, okay, Kelly, I'll usually get deference to my guest panelists. Go ahead.
Robert's not a libertarian. I am.
Okay.
So let Robert go first.
Anybody, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a conservative. I'm not a libertarian myself, but
all right.
And I kind of lean more towards the Green Party, but
well, then we're libertarian because I read that in the description page about libertarian. I thought you had a libertarian candidate that was either.
Oh no, we did. We had a libertarian. Yeah, we had a libertarian candidate on. But the show is, you know, I call it the grassroots We the People show. We have we've had folks from, of course, the Republican Party on. We've had libertarians on the show. We've had Constitution Party folks. We've had Green Party folks on the show. So we're open up to, I mean, if liberals want to call in, those are welcome to call in as well.
Okay.
Because, you know, at this point we think it's more like the American people have to come up against the government because they're becoming, as you pointed out, more corrupt and gaining more and more power. Not just the government. I mean, the government is hand in hand with your larger corporations.
Yeah, well, everybody realizes this is crony capitalism and fascism. But again, does anybody have an answer for that?
Sure. Let me get to that. That through my, I mean, we've had a number of libertarians on the show, and that's one something. That's a topic that our guest tonight did not cover about safety nets. Is that the ones we had in the past said that what they realize we have safety nets, and they would not. They would not propose that we were to get rid of them altogether, especially in a, you know, quick fashion. It would be something that they'd want to start to lessen the amount of, you know, the safety nets, you know, only as the, you know, the economy got better. Because they know that, you know, it's important to have those safety nets because right now the economy's in shambles. But if you went to better the economy, then there'd be less need to have, you know, being.
Okay, well, that would beg the question.
They have less need to have so much in safety nets. Well, I mean, right now, what we hear, I'm sure you hear the polls all the time, or at least people saying this on TV, is 46% use some kind of government social program of some nature.
Well, yeah, but again, that still begs the question. How would you create a suitable economy so that people could actually find enough jobs, so that safety nets could be eliminated, so that people would have have confidence in the future? So how, again, would anybody there, libertarians in particular, answer the question, make the because right now neither the Republicans nor the libertarians, especially libertarians, really don't make a dent with a bunch of people nowadays. So how would you draw into the fold people who would take a look at the Tea Party, take a look at libertarianism, and say, you know what, this is the viable way to go. This is the way for me. Even though I haven't perhaps done as well as I would have liked to in this society, I am going to change my vote. I'm going to change my particular philosophy from either being a Republican, conservative, liberal, etc., to that of a libertarian, constitutionalist, whatever.
Okay.
How would you do
that? Well, I've got an answer for you.
Okay.
For the past, at least 4 years, we've got 6 years of a Democrat president. We have a Democrat Senate. And how's your life now? How is your life in the past 4 to 6 years? How's it been? Would they rather continue to rely on government safety nets, or would they like to, be gainfully employed and be a member, contributing member to society? Which one would they rather do? Now, as I said, the libertarians, and I would even say the conservatives don't say we should get rid of safety nets. But they would like to see them, lessen as a part of, how much the government is spending.
Yeah, but then somebody will say to you, well, that sounds really nice in terms of political rhetoric, but I need my unemployment insurance. And maybe Obamacare didn't work out well, but I still need going to the hospital in terms in case of emergencies. I still need, it's great to have food stamps in case I'm unemployed for too long. So, I mean, talk is cheap. How do you guys plan on helping me in case?
Well, you want to talk about improving the government. There's a lot of trade laws, I think, that need to be changed. I think there's a lot of regulations that, strangle small businesses that need to be changed. I think you have unfair tax practices. I think that you have too many you have to do something with too many people who are drawing from the general fund and not, enough contributing to it. So you need those things to improve the economy.
Well, you've got the rich. I mean, you've got the one percenters, the one-tenth of one percenters. Get the money from them. They're the ones who are either robbing America or plundering America, or maybe, in case of your argument, maybe they're contributing more to America than I am, but how am I going to survive? So what do you say to that?
And that's a very good question, and here's what my answer is at. The 1%ers or the 1/10%ers get the money from there are two things. One, you can take all their, you can take all their money, and it's not really going to take that much of a percentage of what we draw in revenue. Here's the problem. Here's the problem, is because you have your politicians and your one, this is my opinion, but you have your one, you have your one percenters or your 10%ers, and you have your politicians, and they're working hand in hand against this, regardless of the party, regardless of Democrats, regardless of Republicans, because what you have is you have the political elite, okay, through keeping the job market the way they are, they're building constituents of dependence, is what they're doing. They're using the Republican-Democrat, the right-left paradigm against it, is what they're doing, okay? They're keeping these – the Republicans aren't really – if you look at it, the Republicans really aren't doing anything to get rid of the safety nets. And the thing is people would – I would think people would rather work than have to collect unemployment, would actually be able to buy their own life – health insurance, life insurance, and instead of relying on the government – buy their own food instead of relying on the government.
Right. How is the economy going to be fixed well enough so that people can have jobs? I mean, look, the jobs were exported overseas. So, again, I'm going to take devil's advocate. You guys are just a bunch of political rhetoric specialists. I don't trust the Democrats. I don't trust the Republicans. And all you guys are saying to me is that if you guys got into power, now I'd have to worry about a new bunch of crooks. Eh. So go ahead, answer that.
For us, what we're saying is the people who are supposed to be representing us now are not. All they're doing is building constituents of dependents.
I need those dependents. I need my unemployment insurance.
To keep people.
But you guys are eliminating unemployment insurance.
Hold on, don't interrupt me. I'll let you go. We don't interrupt people on the show. So let me finish.
Okay.
So now you get the libertarians. Okay, vote for libertarians. Is when you have the libertarians, how many of the libertarians are, for one, career politicians? I mean, how many of them are lawyers, you know, professions such of that nature? That's why these folks, and I'm not fully libertarian. I'll let Kelly speak on that.
Yeah, you're a conservative,
that.
Right.
You have to get the grassroots people who are not career politicians. You got to get them in office, you know, people who aren't going to just, you know, get in there and do nothing but try to keep themselves in power. That's what we have to do. We got to get all these career politicians out of there who are in bed with the big corporations and the 1%.
Let me interrupt.
We got to wake up and mask. Go ahead.
Okay. What makes you think that your libertarians are going to be any different? Once you guys take power, you guys have taken power. And you have crony capitalism, you'll have crony libertarianism. Come on, give me something.
Okay, well, we got two things. One, I'm going to bring it over to Kelly. And let Kelly tell you what he thinks, and then we want to. And this is, we talk about solutions here in the show. We'll talk about what we think, and then I want to hear what solutions you think would be
no
good.
Problem.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Joe.
Joe, all right, hey Joe. Right. I was going to call you a Skype caller, but I'm really glad. You know, you have the ability to just like boom, here it is. You don't hold any punches.
Look, I've been
like
a libertarian for a long time. I formed a coalition for Ron Paul way back when. Okay, I've been going through this for a long, long time. I just wanted to find out, you know, if you guys had a different perspective.
Huh. Okay, well, yeah, I'm still a big Ron Paul fan. Gosh, there's so many issues here. I have seen a shift, okay? I've had liberal friends, and they start awakening me that corporations are evil. And now you look at Alex Jones, if you ever listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations do a very evil thing. They have the money to go ahead and lobby a state legislature or federal, and now you have to buy their products. For example, in California, Democrat run, fire sprinklers are required in every new home. I was there in a galley at the state legislature when they started the first round, which was retrofit all the schools with fire sprinklers. I'm like, are you out of your freaking mind? These things go off, you're going to have all this mold, all this problem, safety issues. It's going to cost way more. And you know, assemblyman in California, he said, look, 80% of the vandalism happens after school hours. We don't need this. But no, we got to protect the kids. And somebody was behind this who, and it's hard to get a contract. I'm actually a civil engineer. It's hard to get a license to put in fire sprinkler systems. What's that mean? You can make a ton of money if you lobby your legislature and pass this bill. You have so much, you'll be an instant millionaire. One of the best ways to make a million is invent a safety device. Of course, your marketing plan fails because nobody wants to buy it. So you go to the government, state, federal, you force people to buy it. You become a millionaire. Of course, you've got to pay off your politicians who pass your bill. Thank you very much. Democrats, Republicans both do it. And there's a huge shift. Even Alex Jones, he's ripping on the Republicans for corporatism and lobbyists.
Well, he's never been a Republican. He's always been a libertarian.
Alex Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm seeing a shift where the R's and D's are realizing these corporate fascists are really doing bad things and, you know, the middle class. That's just what's going on in our world. And
how come other people aren't seeing it, though? Again, this is... For me, libertarianism is a brain-dead issue. You take a look at it, if you're ambitious, if you are willing to fail, eventually you will succeed, okay? But the argument from black people, Hispanics, other minorities, is that they feel they'll be left out of the loop. So how do you get them back.
They feel that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Juan Williams, there's been, what's his name? He did the prayer breakfast. There are many good black folks saying, hey, look, you know, we've been sold some bill of goods here. It's point-blank spooky. What?
Yeah, but they're not making an impact. I mean, you've got Thomas Howell, you've got Williams, you've got some other people, but they're not making a difference. Okay? So, again, my question, yeah, you know, if you guys have any particular solutions for that, that's cool. But if you don't feel bad because not too many people do. I have my own particular solutions and what I say, but it's not any more effective than what you guys are saying.
Yeah. Well, libertarians, okay?
I definitely want to hear that.
Well, what I say?
Yeah, certainly. I certainly want to hear what you think.
It goes along with what you've said in that, look, you know the Democrats and Republicans are corrupt. Libertarians that have 600 people in office, there's not been one sexual nor financial scandal among 600 people, libertarians, in public office since forever, okay? What we believe in is equal opportunity for all. We believe in equal justice. So that in case you do fail, yes, the government will not come in to save you, but when we repair the economy by getting rid of the Federal Reserve, getting rid of the interest payments, getting rid of China being the biggest debtor, or is it taken over by maybe them, but of that particular currency system, the economy will pick up. And this is not utopia pie in the sky. This is something which I tell people. Back in the 50s, we've had this. You keep government out of your pocket, out of your social affairs. You have a very viable economy. When you have a viable economy and you have enough businesses in which they can have enough consumers, then you have businesses growing, they can hire people, you will be hired. 6 million jobs have gone overseas, not because of corporations, but because of government taxes and regulations. You bring them back home, get rid of the tax credits that allow corporations to have their trillions of dollars overseas and plunk it back here in America, open up pipelines and other opportunities. You'll have blue-collar jobs. You'll have an enhancement of white-collar jobs. There will be jobs. Now, they're afraid of, if you get rid of everything that's a little slanted towards minorities to have protected them from what happened to them during slavery, they're afraid that they'll go back to the times of slavery. And I said, no, you've got guns now. Blacks can read. That's not going to happen. If you fail, you still have the opportunity to grab yourself up from your bootstraps, find employable skills, and get your ass into work, or find yourself as an entrepreneur, and you do just fine. There are other blacks who can do it. Other Hispanics, immigrants have done it. You can do it. But it doesn't make an impact.
Impact on a personal level or on a national level?
Well, on a national level, of course it will. If libertarians thought like I did, and there were 435 of these scumbags in office who got swept out, and 435 of your libertarians or constitutionalists got swept in, on a personal level, doesn't make a dent.
Wow. Well, if I invented something, which I'm working on inventing, and I've got some homeless people working for me, it's a big dent in their life, and if I do as well as I hope, I'll be doing very well on my personal level, and I can help other people out. The national level, here's the bad news. I just got to be straight up with you. I'm pretty sure you can handle this. Let's suppose some magic happened. Libertarians are in office, state, federal, everything else. We are going to go through a very hard transitional stage. Okay? We will. And it'll probably be a little worse for just a little while. Then all of a sudden it will skyrocket. And then the jobs you're discussing, I'm wanting for a lot of people, will happen. And then I won't have to be a member of the homeless committee anymore. You know, it's going to happen. But there will be some tough transitional periods. And then we will skyrocket.
Yeah, there'll be at least 4 years because, you know, the damage for what the Federal Reserve has done in cooperation with the crooks called the Democrats and Republicans, that can't be repaired overnight. And as one of you said, most libertarians aren't really advocating for the quick demise of the safety net. You know, it has to be done over time. Even Ron Paul, he never said, get rid of the safety net now. He said, it'll be a transition phase. So I'm agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the question is, how do we deal with the transition? That might be a more politically acceptable way to get votes. a transition is better than still going off the cliff. But yeah, we have got to get back to the fundamental principles that made this country great. And, you know, what I see, our motto with the homeless shelter is a hand up, not a hand out.
Real quick, I got to interject here, Kelly, you know, and that's one of the things that I think, you know, with our American culture and what made America great is, you know, back in the 40s, 50s, you know, America was probably, you know, at least in my opinion, at least in most recently, that's in the height of, you know, America, I believe, was in the 40s and 50s, when America was at its height in many ways. Maybe not as much, you know, financially per se, but that remains to be seen. But
from the 20s through the 60s, America went through a great transition. It became the greatest power on the planet simply because we were left alone. We haven't had that kind of resurgence yet.
And what about, now I'm going to bring in the social issues part because, you know, back then, you know, the family was important. The, you know, we protected the most innocent, which I'm, you know, I'm talking about unborn babies. We protected those, you know, abortion wasn't legal at the time. And that was a big part of, you know, American culture. That's, you know, who America.
Hello.
Why we're seeing the decline in America. I mean, I think we're losing ourselves. We're losing our culture. We're losing who we are. And I think a big part of that is, you know, because of these, you know, social issues, but these two in particular, and it looks like that. I understand we've got a lot of things going on that need to be taken care of, but I think these are two issues that, you know, and we've heard it almost directly, people saying, well, we just got to put them on the wayside. And I think that, you know, because of, you know, those two. You know, I think, you know, if a guy and a guy gets married or a girl and a girl gets married and they want to do, you know, civil unions where, you know, they get insurance, as the gentleman that mentioned earlier, or benefits or things of that nature, I frankly, I don't have a problem with that. What people do in their bedrooms, their own business, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you start, you know, bringing in the family, and I think we had a guy on named James Carr who was actually, if you go to his website, really didn't have, you know, he made some comments that was basically was saying, well, hey, you know, how well has the traditional family done, you know, in recent decades, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I really put a bad light on the traditional family, and I think those things, those issues are contributing, you know, in a way, even to our economics, because I just think that our principles are going away.
Well, that's the result of the government interfering again. I believe there's a concerted effort by the government as a result of the leftover of communists from FDR's time to make us a communist country. And for example, there's a book out called The Betrayal of America. I forget the author's name. It's West, I believe, Diane West, I believe. And she took a look at the classified archives from Russia and the classified archives from the United States and found out that the FDR administration was peppered with communist-leaning people, as well as some spies. Up there in the, I think the chief of staff was either a Russian spy or somebody, and FDR himself admired Stalin. So we've had people who have had contaminated our so-called American values from day one, practically, because I don't think anybody here is older than 90. So our American values have depreciated over the years as a result of government interference, political correctness, and a concerted effort to split up the family, split up friendships, and to cause divisiveness no matter where it is. And in terms of social issues, as libertarians, I myself don't care what anybody else does, even if it's weird. Just do not harm me, lie about me, steal my stuff, and you in your backyard can do gerbils for as much as you would love to do it. I don't care. Just don't bug
me. I don't care about that. Unless children get involved. I mean, that's why I kind of like on the homosexual marriage thing is when you bring kids into the picture, I think it puts a different dynamic on it.
Yeah, well, there's something fundamental, and I think Joe probably understands this. The way our court system was, you know, we're talking 1400s, 1600s, 1800s, mm-hmm. common law tenant, harm no one, their property, or their rights by willful injury or neglect.
Mm-hmm.
If there's nobody harmed, why is somebody going to jail? Why even here for
there
a jury?
There you go. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, and the other factor of this is, look, okay, when the last time somebody, I'm sure there's still death penalties on the books for sodomy. When the last time the government actually enforced sodomy laws? Like, really? The government doesn't have enough resources to get into your bedroom. Like, if they do, they're going to come at 3 in the morning and call you, haul you off to a FEMA camp. They don't have the resources in their personal lives. It's not possible, practically.
I don't know about that. I think right now they're making huge incursions into our private lives through political correctness. And and there's a gay agenda. I have nothing. I'm not homophobic. I have nothing against gays. I don't think gays are going to influence heteros to become gays. Don't care if they do. But there is a gay agenda. And that gay agenda is politically motivated to divide the country. If you are a lesbian couple or a gay couple, I think in California, but I may be wrong about this, but in at least one of the states, they want to change your birth certificate so when they adopt kids, that it's not mommy and daddy anymore. It's parent one and parent two.
Mm-hmm.
That's a political agenda. By
that's,
doing
that's
a slippery slope.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Well, I recently, well, about, I don't know, 6-9 months ago, I came out of the closet. I'm lesbian.
Oh, you like?
I like.
All right.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right.
I like women. I like being around them, feeding them, kissing them, touching them. I'm lesbian, you know.
You know what? I got to say that in the office one day, because that way I can get around sexual harassment. You know, like when a guy used to say,
yeah.
"Hey, you know, don't worry about it. I'm a doctor." Now you can say, "Hey, don't worry about it. I'm a lesbian," because they don't mind being touched by other girls. So that's something I should say.
There you go.
Well, if you listen to our other archives, I joke around just left and right, but that's another story.
Oh, left and
but,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. But I'm like, look, you know, you want to be gay? That's, you know what? The government can't enforce it. Number two, that's your private life, you know? I, you know, am I going to trust you with adoption? I don't think so. But, you know, you just, yeah, it's government. Again, back to the bottom line about the feds. Once we open the door to social issues, we give the government a blank check to grow to infinity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening.
Well, I agree. Well, I'm going to let you guys get back to your show. I hope you guys don't mind in case you ever have candidates again. If I call in, I have a reputation for grilling candidates, so I want to let you know. I don't like being
limited.
Huh? If you can't,
don't be a candidate if you can't take some grilling.
Oh, that's what I say.
Hey, Joe, I want to ask you a favor. I like our conversation. I like your straightforwardness. You know, I was raised on a farm, so I like straightforward people.
Mm-hmm.
Friend me on Facebook. I'm at Kelly Z. Mordecai.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Friend me, and I'll friend you back. I like the conversation.
Oh, well, I won't do that, and the reason is not because of anything that happened here. It's because before the NSA was revealed by Snowden, I realized that we were all getting recorded and monitored, so I have no fingerprint at all on the Internet.
Wow, except Skype tonight.
Not even that.
Okay.
But thanks for your
attention. No, well, we appreciate you calling in, Joe. And one thing we do here, you know, if you're new to the show, if you listen to a couple times, is we do have what we call the roundtable discussion, which is different from a lot of other talk shows you may have listened to. Is that, of course, you know, they'll call in, somebody get their 10 minutes or so to chime in, tell them what we think. But we do things differently here, where someone calls in, and of course, if they're, you know, respectful and don't try to talk over folks and things of that nature, we keep their mics open, and they're welcome to stay for, you know, as long as the show if they like, or the entire show if they like to. And we try to bring things back around and give people, you know, of course we can't always do equal time, but we at least try to give people, you know, some time
on
the show. So whenever you
like
to call
in,
you're welcome.
In case somebody has a you know, a different point of view, if they want to debate me, that's cool, if that's what you mean.
Oh, yes, certainly. Certainly, that's always, debate and discussion is always welcome here on the show.
Do you have anybody who wants to debate now? If not, then I'd, I'd just like to hang up and concentrate on some other things.
Well, no problem. Yeah, no, not tonight. Our candidate has left, and we'll talk a little bit about the show coming up this Saturday, which is a special date and day and time, which will be Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Is we'll be having some folks calling from Washington, D.C., and that would be Dan Gray and James Neighbors will be calling in from the Operation American Spring there in Washington, D.C. We look forward to hear that. We'll also hear from Colonel Riley, I'm sure, who will be there with them. And so that'll be interesting. So put that on your calendar, folks, 3:30, this coming up Saturday the 17th at 3:30 p.m.
Is that Central, Eastern, Pacific time?
Oh, thank you very much for asking. That was Eastern time.
Okay.
It's 3:30 Eastern time. And, Jennifer,
right.
We do have a number of candidates and folks on. We're working on getting another Florida candidate coming in, or another governor who's running for governor calling in the next couple of weeks. And also we're looking on getting some folks to call in to talk about current events from the Heritage Foundation.
No, cool. I'd like to call back in the future myself. And, again, if you have candidates and don't mind perhaps a little bit of a besmirching of your reputation by the time I get finished with them, because I've had people say, I didn't come on your show to get grilled by this guy. And, well, as far as I'm concerned, if you're running for office, even though I'm not a constituent, too bad. So.
Well, no, that's fine. I mean, that's how we, do the interviews is for folks who are listening in. You have not come into the show. What I'll do is we usually, and it depends on how long they can stay on. I mean, we've had guests who said, we can only stay an hour, and they'd be on for the whole 2, sometimes 3 hours for the show. Mm-hmm. In this instance, he had another show he had to call into. But generally how it works is I'll interview them for between a half hour to an hour, and then I open up the mic to the panelists and our contributors, and then they get the opportunity to speak with and then ask questions of our guests. And then after that, we bring in the audience for them to have any comments or questions. And then after the interview portion of the show, which generally lasts between an hour and a half, we have the other hour and a half of the show, because it's about a three-hour show most nights, where we have the roundtable discussion where we continue our talk on whatever issues we're discussing that night.
How often are you guys appearing per week?
Currently, we are on every Wednesday, just once a week. I'm hoping in the not-too-distant future to expand on that, but currently we're only on Wednesday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Okay, lasting until?
1 a.m. Eastern time.
Oh, okay. So 3 hours, all right.
Yeah.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to be on your show at least once a week, twice a week. And then also bring in some other people who have differing opinions and see what we can do to change their minds. I don't know if we can, but, I happen to believe I'm more of an anarcho-capitalist than I am a libertarian. I'm not that much into the Constitution as I used to be. I'm more for the premise of the Declaration of Independence. If I'm a free person, then why in the body of the Constitution is there eminent domain, general welfare clause, et cetera, et cetera? So I like the Bill of Rights. I don't like the body of the Constitution as much. But I always enjoy civil debates because I can learn from another person who has a different point of view of which I haven't thought of before. So I'd be glad to call in again. And let me see. You won't be going off for another hour, so who knows? I might call back later on tonight after I finish what I have to do.
Okay. Well, actually, just to let you know, though, and this is some logistics for here on Blog Talk Radio, is that for the first 2 hours, when people call in, the show is live and on air live. Now, the last hour, which we call the extended period, is not live.
Okay.
However, it will. The third hour does become a part of the archive, and every one of the shows are archived that can be found later and listened to later. Now, but if someone does not call in within the first 2 hours, after in the third hour of the show, they're not able to call in. And so that being said, it is quarter till the top of the midnight hour Eastern time. So if anyone would like to listen into the extended version, You can call in at 347-945-7428. And unfortunately, if you don't call in within the next, I would say, 15 minutes, then the live portion will unfortunately cut you off and you will not be able to listen to nor chime in on the extended period.
No, I understood that.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Joe. And we look forward to hearing you back on the show. If not tonight, then on a later date.
Okay, and you'll be around on Saturday, you say, huh?
Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
All right. Well, good luck to you, fellow constitutionalists, conservatives, and libertarians. Okay. Good night.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you on. Thanks, Joe. Well, that was pretty interesting. That was really nice to have Joe on the show. Looking forward, as I said, to having him on some more. So, as I said, we got about 14 minutes left of the live portion of the show. And we will go into extended period at least for a little while. I don't know if we'll do it for the full hour tonight. We have a couple of our panelists who are on their way or at least working towards D.C., and so we have them on tonight. And plus, I've got some things that I need to take care of myself, so it may be an earlier show tonight, but I'll be getting some things prepared for this Saturday as well. So, again, if anyone would like to call in, that's 347-945-7428, if you'd like to chime in about anything you heard tonight. So, Kelly, I'm going to bring the mic back over to you for the last portions of the live time we have here.
Well, I really like Joe. Oh, my gosh. I love it when people are straight up. I love it when they can say, I looked at this and that, and it's the beep, beep, swear word. Ball, beep. I'm sorry, I went into my Tourette syndrome again. I hope we can get more people like this. And I'm really hoping that more people call in because I want to get other people's response. And the number again is, Robert?
It's 347-945-7428.
Yeah, who knows? We might find another person like Joe or somebody. Had several people call in, and they're like, oh, my gosh, you are more valuable than you realize. Like my mother. It's like I'm talking with her on Mother's Day. Like, no, Mother, you don't get it. So I had to write her a letter. You know, some people think, well, you know, it's just what everybody should do because they live naturally. You know, this is natural. I care about my kids. I care about this and that and other people. And it's no big deal. It's like, no, you have incredible, valuable insight. I wish my mother would, like, I wish you could write a book or something. You got the humble people out there, like, well, this is how everybody should think. And they have a way to explain it, like Joe. It's like, where are they? Please call. I mean, I'm very good at rambling on and on and blah, 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 blah. It's like, there are so many other people like my mother, like Joe. What am I saying? Call. Give us your feedback. Give us your response. Because, you know, this country wasn't founded on one unique individual. It was founded on some ideals, and people just ran with it, and everybody loved it. And so, I don't know, I'm just rambling right now. So, but,
Oh, no, that's
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm just like, call in, please. All right. So, anyway, yeah, I guess I want to talk about the Libertarian Party.
Number of interesting folks. Come on. I'm sorry?
Well, I want to talk about the Libertarian Party, some little quirks they have. You know, there might be some other Libertarians listening, or those who are Libertarian but they don't know it yet, like I was for 10 years. You know, got out of the donkey and elephant game. But, you know, one of the things that they do, they take a simple issue and they complicate it. And I'm like, really? How are you going to get elected when people don't understand you? Let's see. They've got some really good things in the sense of you got these closet Second Amendment folk, like they're called Democrats. They really love the Second Amendment. And they come into the Libertarian Party. Oh, well, you know. There's these Republicans who have said, no. I don't like corporatism anymore. Oh, Libertarian Party. There you go. You've got And then they come into the Libertarian Party, and what happens is people are like, you know what? You just put into words what I've been feeling and thinking but can't express. And you're right. When I went to the state convention, I'm like, oh, that was a brilliant statement. The Constitution is a treaty between the states. It's a treaty for a union that works. You know, you just every time I talk with libertarians, they're like, oh, I learned something. Oh, then I learned another thing. Oh. And it comes down to what our guest was talking about today. You know, when asking the question, well, you know, it's individual liberties. Yes, individual liberties, you understand them. Then you'll understand how your state's out of line. Then you'll realize, oh, my gosh, the feds are way out of line. Okay, the next challenge is, for the libertarians, how do you communicate that simply? How do you put it in words that people are like, oh, I get it. The feds are too? I mean, I finally figured it out because I passed a resolution at the California Libertarian State Convention last year. One sentence on the grand jury. Passed unanimously, and I got applause. Oh, I think I finally figured it out. Make it simple. And if I want to go into the intellectual, look at my argument. I wrote 3 pages on what I could say in one sentence. No, I'm stupid because I'm not thinking about the listener. I'm not thinking about the receiver of the information. How do I put it simply so people understand? If they want more, they always want more. You go here. Click here. I don't care. Libertarians don't have this figured out, and it's frustrating. And the other thing about libertarians, they try to be so accepting. So, overwhelmingly accepting. We got, socialists, supposedly we're really accepting. Okay, we pull in the Democrats. Oh, but then we alienate some of the Republicans. Okay, Republicans, we love the Constitution. But we're so accepting, so we alienate them. And then, it's such a mix. I can't explain it. I wish I had more time. I have to figure it out first. But they're being so accepting that they attract a certain amount out of Democrats and Republicans equally. But then they turn away a huge number of people. I'm like, can't you guys figure this out? Oh, that's right, states' rights issue. State sovereignty issue. You put the social issues in the hands of the state, and we solve most of these problems. But libertarians haven't figured that out yet, so it's frustrating.
Well, we do see, and I'm glad to see it, our other panelist here, Cindy Todd, on the line. So, Cindy, I'm going to open up your mic. Thank you very much for calling the show. How are you? Is she unmuted?
Okay.
Her mic?
I got to unmute. Sorry.
There you go. We know you, Cindy.
Well, I've just been sitting here listening. I really didn't have a whole lot to say. I mean, I do, but wow, I don't know if I should get into it and bend everybody's ear. But I just do have to say one thing. You know, if we're talking about libertarians, the one problem, well, there's a couple of problems. They get most stuff right. But I think I have a big problem with 2 issues in particular. One is that they don't consider most of them. Kind of hard to say because I don't know if it's a platform item with them or not, but most of them don't really consider the person in the womb a real person. And so in that case, they're not worthy of the protection of the Constitution. Our preamble says that they've drawn up the legislation to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But apparently some life is protecting and some isn't. And that's where I differed with the man, with the guy who was running, forgot his name.
Adrian Wiley.
Yeah. And it's funny, I haven't even heard of him running here. I'm here in Florida, and I haven't heard of him running, so that's kind of strange. But anyway, I definitely differ with him on that issue. I think that the government's responsibility is to protect life. And that means protected from our enemies, foreign and domestic. And that includes any doctor who would kill a baby in a womb. I think as a Christian, he should know that God looks inside the womb and has a purpose and a love for that child right from the beginning. And when we decide we're going to snuff it out, we're playing God and saying, nah, we don't really like this life. We don't need this life. Let's just get rid of it. And by the way, scientifically speaking, by the time a person knows they're pregnant, that baby has of its own and a nervous mm-hmm. system, and it does feel pain. And yet they can dismember it and suck it up a tube, and it doesn't matter to them.
You know, I'm trying to point some things out, and I must, it sounded like he was actually getting upset with me. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'll start monopolizing the conversation, as I said. So I just turned things over to Kelly. But, that actually surprised me, too. That's why I kept bringing up, you know, him being a Christian. And folks who are, you know, listening on the show know where I'm at, you know, theologically. But, you know, that's what, I mean, that surprised me. I would think that he would, you know, want to fight more to it, especially get that definition of life, you know, if they can get a legal standing on it, legal definition. I thought that'd be something he'd support and fight for.
Well, God has told us that righteousness exalts a nation, and it's a shame for us to not be righteous. And when we try to make end runs around God and get away with stuff like, you know, okay, you had sex out of wedlock, you got pregnant, and now you're going to try to get rid of it, okay? You make an end run around God, and you think you're doing something? I mean, you think that God isn't up there ready to just, I mean, when he looks down at America and sees what we have become, why in the world would he continue blessing us? Why in the world would he keep protecting us from our enemies? Why would he allow us to continue to be successful and financially so strong? What he's saying to us, I believe, in the troubles that we're having now is, you guys have left me, so I'm going to leave you. I mean, I'm going to leave you alone. You've left me alone. You've kicked me out of the schools, kicked me out of the public square. Well, what can I do? I can't do anything. My hands are tied.
Real quick, folks, real quick. It's only about a minute of live time, so we'll be going to extended version. We don't know how long we'll be in there, but if you'd like to call in to listen in, 347-945-7428. If you'd like to chime in, that's 347-945-7428. If you just like to listening to the extended version of the show. If not, the entirety of the show will be available immediately after the show. Or actually, it's actually after the live portion of the show, the show is available on the archives that I've seen. So check that out. And so go ahead, Cindy.
Well, that was basically my point. I don't know how we can continue to, excuse me, how we can expect God to continue to bless us as a nation. And I do believe we have been blessed as a nation. We have been generous with the rest of the world. We have gone out and sent missionaries to witness and to take care of people and to teach them how to farm and to give them medical attention and to teach them all kinds of things. We've spent billions of dollars of the money from Christians and the money from our government to help foreign nations. And yet, we're the scourge of the earth, according to, you know, all the communists, the Muslims, the atheists. We're just good for nothing. And I think that the reason the attitude towards America has changed, because God has, you know, God has a way of causing favor with men. He can put favor on us with men anytime he wants to. And as the prayer of Jabez says, he can increase our territory. He can enlarge our territory, or he can shrink it, okay? As a nation, as a whole, not talking about individuals, but as a nation as a whole, he is shrinking us in the eyes of the world. And it's because of how the Christians, now I'm not even talking about atheists and other religions in the country that, you know, don't believe in the same God. I'm not even talking about them. I'm talking about just us Christians have allowed this nation to deteriorate the way it has. Because somewhere along the line, we decided we're not going to get involved with politics. We've got better things to do. That's just old dirty stuff up there in Washington, and we don't want to have any part of that. We're above all that. We're too good for that, or whatever. I don't know what they want to, I don't know what excuse they want to give, but there's no difference in the amount of people that are registered to vote in the church and out of the church. They are not taking their responsibility as an American citizen or as a Christian. God gave us this nation, and we are the ones who are supposed to run it. Not a king, not a King Obama. And so when we relinquish that responsibility and we go off the deep end and our country is in the pits and the Christians are just silent, what do you expect God to do? So anyway, that I totally agree with him. I mean, I totally disagree with him on the issue of abortion, and I disagree on the issue of homosexuality too. I am of the opinion, I don't care, well, I do care, because I think it's destroying people. I think homosexuality is destroying people. So I do care about those people and what they're going through and what their life is. But as far as laws against it are concerned, I don't think we should try to illegalize it or whatever, somehow make it illegal as some states used to do. I think there is no way that you could police that. But anyway, you don't have to give them special privileges. They get privileges that my husband and I can't get, and they get mm-hmm. privileges that couples who are living together, you know, heterosexual couples that are living together can't get. And they're asking us, they're telling us, we don't want to allow you to choose whether to accept us or not. In other words, if I want a job in your church and you tell me I can't have the job because I'm a homosexual, then, you know, I'm going to force you.
You're discriminating against me.
Yeah, you're discriminating. I'm going to force you. I'm going to force you to marry me.
I don't agree with that.
I'm going to force you to accept me in your apartment or in your basement where you have renters, whatever. They want to force themselves on people. And I have a niece that is a homosexual. She's a lesbian. And she's the same way. She's mad at those of us in the family who will not accept her the way she is. She comes to our, you know, dinners and stuff like that. It's not that we shun her, but she knows that we don't accept what she is doing as right. And she just gets so angry at us because she thinks that we ought to just embrace it and consider her just normal like everybody else. Well, according to the Bible, there's nothing normal about it. According to human biology, there's nothing normal about it. And so I have that problem with Mr. Wiley. Now, I missed some of the very beginning, but libertarians usually have the economics aspect of political life
figured out. I was really happy with the first part of it, and what he had to say about the economics, things of that nature. So there was a lot I did agree with. It's just, of course, in the social issues, what I do most of, not libertarians per se, but libertarian platform, or at least where a lot of them seem to be, I didn't agree with. But, Kelly, I know there's some things you want to chime in about and talk with Cindy with, so go ahead.
Well, yeah. I wanted to, if I can make it simple, as I have been proclaiming, I want to differentiate things, okay? There's a woman in her, God help her, a woman in her kitchen or bathroom doing her own abortion, and then you have a doctor doing the abortion. If I was governor, I would totally support and probably proactively pursue that anyone, parentheses, except for the woman, anyone who does an abortion has committed murder. I said governor, I meant state. You see the clear difference? It's like, you want to kill somebody, you're going to jail, okay? I don't care if it's, after conception or out of the womb. I don't care. It's called murder. Mm-hmm. But a woman, it's frustrating, but if she wants to suffer the physical and internal consequences, and the consequences mostly upon her conscience for doing an abortion, oh my gosh, the state can't really stop it. I mean, John Adams said there's no law that will bridle the passion of the human heart. But somebody else, obviously, if you're going to have somebody perform an abortion upon you, obviously there is enough time to really think about it. Obviously there is a medical procedure. It's called murder. You see the difference, Cindy? The difference is someone performing it versus somebody doing it to themselves.
No, I'm sorry. I don't see the difference. You're killing a baby. It doesn't really matter who's doing it.
I know. Okay, I know this. Okay, let me
pull this. It may be considered a crime of passion. You could say it's a crime of passion. It wouldn't be a first-degree murder.
It would be a first-degree murder upon the doctor because he thought about it. He had time to think about it.
Yes, indeed. For the doctor, it's first-degree. I wouldn't call the mother, who is in a distraught, whacked-out state of mind, I would not call hers a first-degree murder, but I would call it a second-degree murder, a crime of passion.
Well, Cindy, I want to ask you a favor.
It's certainly not accidental out of, negligence or something like third-degree murder.
Well, let me ask you a favor, because I've researched the scriptures quite a bit. But sometimes if you have a goal, and that's sometimes how I study the Bible, well, what's God say about this or that, blah, 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 blah. Oh, there it is. Sure enough. I know in the Torah, it talks about if a woman is pregnant and a man accidentally or purposely hits her and the baby dies, the husband can demand any price from the offender, including death. It was a blank check. Okay? That's somebody outside the womb hurting an innocent life. That's very clear in Scripture. Okay?
Yes.
I want to ask you if you can look for any penalty for a mother committing abortion in the Scriptures. Scour through and find it.
Let me ask you this. Well, first of all, it just wasn't done back there. I don't know why that would even be in there. But anyway.
Well, it's not a matter of history because God already knew human behavior, okay? He knew, he foresaw all of our problems, all our sins, and so he knew it clearly that women would commit abortion upon themselves. I'm asking
you. Well, let me ask you this, and this might answer your question or it might get you thinking in a different direction. Should we be prosecuting women who continue taking drugs and drinking alcohol and everything, and they have messed up their babies? Some of them have even killed their babies.
What do you think
we should do?
No, I think
that's
child endangerment.
Yeah.
Right. Well, at the same time, should we give government authority in our lives to the nth degree socially so that,
no.
You know, this is the balance, okay?
No,
how much control do we give?
I disagree with that, and let me say why. Is I don't think that by having it where a woman would be charged with child endangerment, you know, by drinking and taking drugs while pregnant, especially if she's knowingly pregnant. Now, of course, she don't know. You know, if it's the very beginning stage, she don't know, that's different. I mean, if she knows,
right.
You know, she's showing whatever, she knows, then I think it should be child endangerment. And I don't think there's a slippery slope or snowball effect of putting the government, in every aspect of the nth degree, Kelly, is because we're talking about involving another human being. That's why I don't think it would do that, because, you know, if it's something like let's say legalizing drugs. I know a lot of libertarians want to legalize drugs, which, you know, there's part of me who thinks maybe we should support that. However, you know, if someone's taking drugs, you know, perhaps they're only, now, of course, there's, you know, they'll say, oh, if they're on drugs, they can hurt somebody else, and that's, I think that may be a difference, you know.
Well, wait. The libertarians got this covered. Wait, we got to take a step back. They're drugs, okay? If you harm somebody else, you're going to jail, period. All right? They're pretty hard line on that. If you harm yourself, well, then you harm yourself. Okay, fine.
Right, but
if you're
then you're harming someone else.
I know. I'm going into another category here for a second. The war on drugs has done absolutely nothing. Again, John Adams, there's no law that can bridle the passion of the human heart. The war on drugs has done absolutely nothing to reduce drug use. Every decade they come out with a report. Oh, we've kept drug use down from 11 to 11.5%. They said this in the 70s,
hey, Kelly,
80s, the 90s, the 2000s. It's a joke.
Kelly, do you think we've really had a war on drugs? What a pathetic war we've had. If that's a war on drugs, I don't know. I guess to see what a real war was.
Well, it's a joke because they have had absolutely no effect other than criminalizing drugs, raising the price. A lot of people get killed in gangs. I mean, I got to get off topic. But basically, the bottom line is there is no law that can bridle the passions of the human heart. Now,
Then are you saying we just do away with all the thievery laws and murder laws and rape laws? Because you can't bridle someone's heart. They're going to kill. They're going to rape. They're going to murder. So do away with all those laws.
Here is a fundamental principle over John Adams. I mean, we know who John Adams is.
Yes.
All right. There is no law that can bridle the passion of the human heart. There is a law, a principle of nature that trumps this. It's this. We can choose our choices. We cannot choose our consequences. If we murder somebody else, that was our free will, free choice. Our consequences are imposed by the court. You go to jail for murder. You want to go ahead and follow the desires of your heart, let hate run full, and you kill somebody? I'm sorry, you're going to jail, or even you're going to get hung. Government has to impose consequences, period. Otherwise, we will have civil disorder. We will have chaos without consequences being enforced, which is called justice. You know, what does God say in Hosea 6:6? I desire mercy. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly. Wait, what's that first verse? Oh, do justly. Without justice, a nation will crumble. So when we choose to hurt somebody else, boom, swift justice. Now, I'm going to throw something out to you that is going to possibly trump this conversation. Okay? Homosexuality as well as abortions. Okay? The Apostle Paul wrote this about this in Romans 1 and 2. where he said they have incurred upon themselves a due penalty for their perversion, mm-hmm. which obviously he was talking about homosexuality.
Right.
There is all sorts of terrible, terrible personal consequences interwoven in nature when people want to commit homosexuality. Whether or not the government penalizes you is irrelevant. God has interwoven these consequences. And I dearly love my mother, called her on Mother's Day, and she taught me what's natural. What is natural, what is good. Obviously, it's not natural to put my in somebody's it just makes me blah. I ain't going to do that.
Yes, it is Bart's logic after dark. Go ahead.
Okay, so notice I didn't use any.
Well, at least he said.
Yes,
said,
thank
mm.
you. It's right. Still a family show, even after dark.
Right, it gives me the willies to even think about it, so it's not natural. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. So I avoid the consequences if I were to choose such weird perversion. Now, with women committing abortion, it breaks my heart to hear it and the pain they go with. There's a local friend that she's in so much pain still. It was 20 years ago. I won't mention her name, but she did an abortion, and God interwove those consequences in her conscience, in her heart, in her mind. It's just horrifying. You know, there was a wise judge, somewhat relates, there was a wise judge who, it was a child abandonment case. CPS got involved because a woman was, you know, she had a baby. She had to go to work. She's, you know, young mothers are, they're busy. They didn't sleep well because the baby was crying all night, you know, and blah, blah, blah. She went to work. She left the baby in the car. 110, 130 degrees, the baby died in the heat. She mm-hmm. thought she put the baby in daycare, but she didn't. The baby died.
I remember that story.
And the judge ruled, look, I'm setting you free. The consequences of which you are going to face for the rest of your life, living with
right.
yourself, are far more consequences than I could ever impose upon you. You are free to go, and I hope you get healing somehow. You know, that is the interwoven consequences of a woman choosing to abort her baby by herself or, say, a friend comes over. And God has already covered that. If a doctor is going to commit murder, put him in jail.
I think there are some women who just use it for contraception, and they have no qualms about it. I don't think they have any form of guilt conscience over it.
I agree to that to a point, and I think there are some that do that are like that. But I wonder if their conscience would be the same if they're, you know, if they're not even giving a second thought to it, would be the same if they're the ones who actually performed it themselves. See, they go to a doctor and they can separate themselves from the act. They can separate themselves from the abortion because they're not the ones who actually did it. Some third-party person did it. So they're not as in touch with it mentally and obviously physically than if they were to have to do it themselves. If they were to want, so I contend is if they actually have to, in order for it to be done, they would actually have to do it themselves. I really think it would be much more psychologically imposing on them, both, you know, perhaps both prior and afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. That lady who accidentally left her child in the car is not, that's not the kind of, you don't put that lady in jail. That was not an intentional murder. You know, if she had done it on purpose, if she'd say, "You just stay in the car, you stupid crying brat," well, then that is murder. There's obviously
right.
a difference in intent, and I see what you're talking about because one time we were skiing, and I was actually driving the boat at the time, and this huge snake came, you know, just swimming across the lake. It was huge, And we decided that thing had to die because we weren't going to ski with that snake in the lake. So, but I couldn't do it. I could not drive over the snake. So I had my friend jump in the driver's seat and go run over the snake. And so he did it. But I mean, I think a lot of women, most women, don't have that ability to kill things like a man does. They're wired different from us anyway, because they are the ones that have to hunt and fish and you know, take care of.
Are you talking about snakes
whatever.
Or men?
No, I'm talking about men now.
Or are you calling men snakes now?
No, men have a, you know, they have to fight wars, and they have a different way they're wired inside. I have to
That's
wonder.
That's not very PC of you, Cindy.
Well, you know, I'm
just kidding.
Well, I'm not really considered PC, but anyway, I'm very
well, Cindy,
often.
Let me add to your point, okay? We're going on the track of socially incorrect. When I was, I don't know, 8, 9, or 10, you know, I'm thinking, what's the difference here between boys and girls? And it's like, you know, I was 8, you know,
I
got like
I mean, anyway, go ahead. No, tell
it. I was 2, and I had 2 sisters, a mother and a grandmother, and women are wonderful. You know, that's my view of women. I'd like to marry one someday, but anyway, you know, what's the difference between boys and girls? And I thought, well, men have to go off to war, and women, they have to have babies. That must be really tough. And so I knew, you know, even, okay, I got to tell you this other story. This is kind of cute. So my son's 8, and his, like, closest young girlfriend, whatever you call him. All right, so his lady friend Cassidy, you know, they're like peas in a pod. We were neighbors. We play all the time together. It's cute. And so birthday party. Okay, so we go to Cassidy's birthday party. And, you know, some party, and we go to their house, and there's cake and ice cream and presents, and next thing you know, the girls, the mother put a big boom box out in the window, and the girls are dancing on the south side of the house, and dancing and singing and throwing ribbons in the air, and woohoo, girls, yeah. Well, my son and 4 other boys, with 4 boys, 10 girls, 4 boys are on the north side of the house playing with guns. There is a clear difference from the beginning. And that's the way it is. And so, you know, I think it's a good thing that, you know, men and women are different. It's
somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to do that job that the men do.
Yeah, somebody.
Somebody has to do the nurturing.
Well, yeah. Okay, we'll go spiritual on you on this one. All right, so when a husband and wife have a baby, see, God put half of himself in man, half of himself in woman. Okay, I'm a guy saying this. Half and half, that's the way it is. When a child is brought up, he sees the full image of God through the father and the mother. And that's the way it is. We have to live with it. If you get a good unified couple, you have a very mature human being when they reach 18, 20, and they go out into the world. That's the way God intended.
That's been proven.
Well,
I agree, and that's what, you know, I do shared parenting with my daughter. We do 50-50, and we try to make the schedule as close to, you know, a natural as possible. We generally don't spend too much time, you know. I say I don't spend any more than 2-3 days unless I'm out, you know, out of town for work or something. But I generally don't spend, you know, it's generally not 2-3 days that have passed that I don't see my daughter. You know, because we try to make it, as I said, you know, even if I only see her for a couple hours that day, at least she sees Dad part of the day. You know what I mean? So we try to do that because, you know, you guys are right. I mean, that is kind of the natural, you know, way of things.
Yeah.
I wish more people, especially fathers, who want to spend more time with their kids, you know, or can. Would be able to. Unfortunately, for others, they're not as fortunate as I am in that.
Well, you know, I think part of the problem is that people make such horrible creatures out of their children because they don't bother to discipline them, that nobody wants to be around them. and then they wonder how come they don't want to be around their kids. You know,
yeah.
Well,
Kelly,
because you haven't raised them right.
Well, yeah, there's other issues, but yeah, you know, I discovered something once, and by the way, a friend stopped by today in my office, and it's like, I don't know why people keep dropping it off. I can't get work done, but anyway, I'll just call him Bob, okay? This relates to our topic of pro-life, pro-choice. My buddy Bob stopped by today, and you know, we're talking. He's happily married for several years, and they had two daughters by accident, which changed him, by the way. It's beautiful. He's manning up. He's paying the bills. Loves his daughters. Loves his wife. But years ago, he got his fiancée, now his wife, he got her pregnant. He came to me. We're that close. He came to me. And I'm like, ooh, this is delicate, because I convinced a woman to not have an abortion. I said, look, I'll give you $10,000 for your daughter. Like, oh, my gosh, she was insulted by that, because, you know how degraded she was. Well, this woman and my friend's nephew, they're the ones who did the deal, the nephew and this girl. We interviewed at 7 in the morning. I said, look, five doctors told me to have an abortion, and we're just here today because we really care. And I met the daughter. She was born. They got to the clinic, had to drive a couple hours. They got to the clinic and said, we ain't doing this. And they had the baby. Her name is Faith. It's beautiful. So I was 7 a.m. intervention, where I was a little more delicate. But when so my buddy Bob, okay, repeat situation. I'm like, oh, gosh, there's so many sensitivities here. I could really blow it. I just listened, and after he left, I prayed. I said, God, I need help here, because this is such a sensitive, delicate issue. I don't know what to do here. God help, because I really care about this guy. And he's got his girlfriend pregnant, and statistics are if he pressures her into an abortion, 90% chance they will break up. This is so delicate. This is so sensitive. God help me here. And just an earnest prayer. It came to me. And through prayer, the mother and the baby are one. The mother and the baby are one. I remember this poem I read like 20 years ago. Having a child is like part of your soul walking around outside of you. That's a mother. The mother and the baby are one. So when a woman chooses to have an abortion, she does it herself, oh my gosh, she is essentially killing herself. It's really bad consequences. It is really far more than I think the state could ever impose.
Well, and you made the analogy of the soul walking outside of her, walking outside of her. So in essence, at least what I'm garnering from it, is that she's not only killing herself in a physical manifestation, she's also in part killing part of her spirit as well.
And that is the consequences I have seen with women who tell me they've had an abortion, or husbands who marry somebody and 5 years later, 10 years later, they're just, it's like they turn their conscious level from like a 10 to a 3, and they're just kind of cold. And it's not that they intend to hurt anybody, it's just, they're just so hurting inside. The internal consequences are just, they're terrible. I wouldn't want to go through that.
Commander, we bring it over to you.
Well, that's why you see so much suicide in women that have had abortions. They they don't understand what's going to happen to them at the time, at that horrible moment when they're deciding what to do. All they can think of is how bad this is going to be, you know, to have this baby. It may be a young girl who thinks she's going to get kicked out of her house. Parents are going to reject her. Her friends are going to reject her. Her boyfriend's going to reject her. It may be an older person, an older woman who's got a really good career going, and she's going to lose her career. it can be any number of things. But basically what happens is in the moment of, distress, she decides to have an abortion, and then later on she realizes what she has done when she's thinking a little more clearly, and then it hits her that she's committed a murder. I mean, they really do understand that they've committed a murder, and or that they've participated in a murder. They didn't actually do the killing. But anyway...
Roe versus Wade, you know, the lady who had the abortion, she came out against Roe versus Wade years later.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And she's actually a very good advocate for pro-life now.
Yes,
right.
Because it comes back to that principle that I received through prayer: the woman and the baby are one.
And you know, when she basically what happened is what she became a Christian, and when she accepted the Lord, that's when her eyes were opened, and she was able to simultaneously understand what she did and then also feel the forgiveness that God gives. And see, that's another thing that makes me so angry is when liberals and pro-choice people accuse us of abusing that woman, making her have that baby.
Didn't want to punish with the baby like Barack Obama said?
Right. So, and that is so absolutely not the truth. That is such a lie to tell on us. I love the ladies. I understand completely what they're going through. I've been in the position where I thought I was going, you know, someone offered me an abortion and I thought that I would do it. Okay, I've been in that position. It didn't happen, okay? So I didn't have to face that. But I've been there, and I know what can be going through your mind. And for these people to tell me that I have no care about that woman, and the thing is, I'm the one who does care. I'm the one who's saying, do you know what you're doing to this woman, that you're wrecking her life? You know that this is going to just, like, totally change her life? You think a baby was going to change her life? Wait till you see how this is going to change her life. And you can have a baby and give it up for adoption. And even that's a big life change. But
oh, it's heart-wrenching. It's heart-wrenching, the decision, because there's all sorts of deceptive factors. Well, you'll go back to your normal life, except your conscience. Oh, you know, maybe you'll meet the Mr. Wonderful and you'll have babies. Yeah, three babies in, they're all happy and wonderful, and they're always thinking about that one that wasn't born. And I've heard these testimonies on James Dobson, these women who, 30 years later, they're just crying still over the loss of their baby. And that's such a, like I said, God interwove these natural consequences, and it's just heart-wrenching. And these deceptive beep, beep, swear word people who convince a woman to commit abortion. You know, there's an amazing movement going on, the pro-life people. They have a van, they have ultrasonic equipment, and they're like, hey, would you like to see your baby? I know you might go have an abortion, but you know, you just want to just see what's going on. Oh, okay. And they have 100% success rate, and that they do not abort their babies.
There's one state that just recently passed a law that you have to show a woman. It's called
an ultrasound?
Right to information law or something like that. I forget what it was, but you have to show them an ultrasound before they have an abortion.
Wow.
And that is
that's awesome.
The work of some of these pro-life people. And there's other states that are trying to get that considered, too. There's been legislation written, but they haven't passed it anywhere else yet that I know of. And I can't remember what state that was. But anyway, a very, and you know, you have the clinics all around now. We have a couple of them in our county where, you know, women can go in to get a pregnancy test, and then our people counsel them and explain to them what the baby looks like and how it has a heartbeat and it has a nervous system and this is what it looks like, and they show them their ultrasound of their own baby, and that is, it makes such a big difference, because these women are being told it's not really a person, it's just a blob, it's tissue,
right,
cells.
It's a collection of cells.
Right, but we know we're so far beyond that. Science has gone so far beyond that that it's ridiculous for them to even say that.
Here's the bottom line. You know, we have a God who wants to do good, and we got devil who wants to destroy our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the devil works mostly through pride, where we do not think about our consequences.
Uh-huh. Yep.
We don't. You know?
How much more do I want to say about this? But the consequences of having a baby are that it changes your life for the better, because you're thinking about this other person 24/7. And all of a sudden, all my selfishness erodes. And it's like, oh, my gosh, how do I do this? Oh, let's get my son to the Y so we can do gymnastics. He, like, gets a kick out of that. Okay, fine. Next thing you know, he's, like, top scorer in his reading class, reading exam. He won a writing contest. This is so cute. I'm like, wow, yeah, I won $20, Dad. Top scorer, great. So on your writing, your reward for writing so well, what are you going to spend it on? He goes, I don't know what I'm going to spend it on.
Aww. That's cute.
You know, it's changed my focus from me to other people. Oh, that's right. That's what God intended, because this life's not about me. And so who would deny somebody that wonderful opportunity for great change? Gosh.
Very well said.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's selfishness. It's selfishness. People have become so selfish, and it's all about instant gratification of everything. And when you have a baby in your life, it's no longer about you and getting your needs fulfilled. Now it's about getting someone else's needs fulfilled. And people don't understand the value of fulfilling someone else's needs. What a wonderful thing that does to your soul, to your spirit. It just it's such a much more pleasant place to be than selfishness, but they don't know it. They don't realize it until they have had a child. And even some people, after they've had a child, they still don't get it. But anyway, I'd like to say one more thing about the Libertarian Party, the guy that's on there. I really have no problem with the Libertarian Party, other than, you know, its social stances. But I really prefer the Constitution Party. If I were going to leave the Republican Party, that's probably the party I would go to, and it's just because of the social issues, and they do get the economics right too.
That's true.
Of course, it's hard to say, because we don't really have a lot of Constitution elected officials out there that actually won their election, and they're out there so that you can look at their voting record. But, you know, it's a sad thing that you take a guy that, like Rubio. I never would have guessed that Marco Rubio would turn into an establishment Republican. But when you get up there and you see how it's run, and you see the opportunities, and you see what a good old boy society it is, and how you really like that pat on the back from the guy who has the power. You really like that kickback that you get from some lobbyist. You start to realize that that's the way it's run. It's not going to change. Well, I might as well just
join
the party. Yeah. And so it becomes a crucial moment. It becomes a crucial factor, what kind of character a person has. That's why when everybody said when Bill Clinton was president, character doesn't matter. I mean, it's not his character. You got to look at what he's doing in the government. He's doing a great job, you know. But that's the thing about it. The only reason he was doing a great job is he was being forced to do a good job. But anyway, but if you have a guy in there that has no character when he enters into politics, all of that stuff is going to happen to him. I don't care what he thinks he's going to do when he gets in there.
Totally agree. If you have no character, you have no principle. If you have no principle, you'll be tossed every way to and fro by the winds of the sea.
Yep. That's right. And so you can be convinced to do something illegal, unethical. You can be convinced that you might as well join the crowd. You got to stand, you know, for an inner moral character. I'm not so certain that a lot of the libertarians fit that character plate for me. I don't know.
Well, Cindy, here's the deal, okay? You know, Mr. Wiley was talking about his Christian faith, okay? Mm-hmm. If we have a bunch of Christians flooding the Libertarian Party, we will get to a much better state than where we are. Numbers.
But the problem is...
With that being said, for example, we'll have to start getting ready to close things out for the show this evening. So we'll have some parting words, and then I'll get ready to start closing things out for the night. And I appreciate you guys being on this. I wasn't going to do a full version of the extended version tonight. I too have a lot of preparation things to do for this weekend on my day job, so to speak, as well as getting things ready for the Saturday show, May 17th at 3:30 p.m. And so what we'll do is we'll get some parting words from you, Cindy, and then you, Kelly, and then I'll do some myself, especially bringing up we had a show last week. We had a Brandon Adams on who is having a double organ transplant, and we're trying to raise some funds for him. And you can go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Go to the Give page, and you'll find a link where you can donate to him and help him and his family out. We had a few folks from last week donate. We really appreciate that, and thank you. But he definitely needs much more support. So definitely check that out at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and go to the Give page, and you can see where you can donate to Brandon. We really appreciate it. Hardworking young man who basically had this stuff come down on him in his prime. He's 28 years old, and him and his family need some help. So if folks do that, we really appreciate it. So go ahead, Cindy, if you could give us some parting words for this evening, and then you, Kelly, and then close things out. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I was just going to say to Kelly, it's really difficult to get a Christian to join a party that isn't pro-life. It's kind of, I don't know, how that's going to happen.
Look at the national platform. They're not pro-life. They're not pro-choice. They're close to state sovereignty, which I'm getting there.
Yeah. But, I wouldn't be able to say, like this guy that was on tonight, I wouldn't be able to say that he's going to help us protect babies, because he just sort of is like, well, whatever happens, you know, if it happens, it happens. He's not going to be proactive about it, and I think we really got to have some proactive people out there, or it'll never happen. And Robert, I'll be listening to the Saturday show. I'll be listening to the Saturday show from my car with my earphones in, because I'm going to be headed to Texas. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be very enjoyable.
Great.
Oh, and did you guys hear about Ben Sasse, the Nebraska? There's a Nebraska candidate for U.S. Senate. Huh? I don't think so. Let's see. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Robert?
Yeah.
You got me?
I can hear you.
Robert? Oh, okay. I don't know what happened with Robert. Okay, well, anyway, that Ben Sass guy from Nebraska, he won the Republican primary. He was one of the conservative guys that was running against the, the Rhino dude.
Awesome. He won the primary.
So, yeah,
oh, Cindy, we have a disagreement here. It's Neocon versus Rhino.
Well, listen, what's better? Which is better, okay? At least we got a little bit something better.
There you go.
Anyway, but we still need to,
check that out. I'd like to try to get him on the show.
Because now he has to go and run against the Democrats, so the Democrat. Anyway, I guess my last word is God help us. God help us, because if we don't repent from all the things we're doing, we've lost his blessings and we've lost his protection. And I don't think in the present world that we live in, without God's protection, we will not survive.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy, for calling the show. We'll at least know that you're there listening in, and hopefully you'll be able to chime in as well. But if not, we understand. So, Kelly, go ahead. We've got a couple minutes here, and then I'll have to close some things out.
Cindy is wonderful, and I wish I would be one of her kids.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah. Let's see here. Goshen. If you look at this is all for Cindy, okay, by the way. Goshen.
Okay. Goshen, the place where the Jews live in Egypt. Go ahead.
The Hebrews, yes. And so, you got all these multiple plagues upon Egypt, but Goshen was always protected. It's absolutely stunning and amazing.
Mm-hmm. They were prosperous.
Yes, they were prosperous. Lots of births, lots of protection when the plagues came upon Egypt to let my people go, is what it says. So, with pro-life, pro-choice, get it out of the hands of the federal government, state by state, they start adopting pro-life platforms. Great. Goshen here, Goshen here, Goshen there, Goshen there.
Mm-hmm.
You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
First, New York and California is like totally, abortion, abortion. You know what? God will deal with you.
Yeah.
Just like he did with Egypt versus Goshen. And that's why I'm a big fan of sovereignty on this issue of pro-life, because God will sort it out in the end. Georgia has made a huge milestone about pro-life, and Judge Roy, or what's his name, Judge Bean, Ten Commandments. Oh, what do you know? He's now the Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court, and they're doing things for pro-life. Goshen.
Mm-hmm.
It is stunning. And so, of course you look at the civil war between Israel. You have the northern group, and then you got the southern group. And God finally said, I don't care about the northern group. And the southern group he protected for a few more hundred years. It goes back to the theory of Goshen. You do what's right, God will protect you.
Mm-hmm.
You do what's wrong, you're going to be dealt with. So I just thought I'd throw that out as far as the state sovereignty and the pro-life issue. So obviously I'm pro-life, but there's only so much I can do and so many rights I have to respect. But, the feds do not belong in the womb, the bedroom, or the vein. I'm sorry. That's just the founders knew this, and they didn't put it in there. So anyway, I'm starting to ramble here a little bit more, but I love that we hash these out. I've one of these days I'm going to sit down, and it's going to take me 8-10 hours to write in all my thoughts on this whole issue, and it'll be well thought out, well communicated, and at least people understand where I'm coming from. But Cindy, I would ask you, and I got to scour the scriptures for this. Are there any penalties in Scripture if a woman aborts her own baby?
Well, it's like I said, that it just really wasn't done. But there is a scripture.
But you're
in
saying
the New
history.
Testament.
History. Okay, history. Well, I know history. Okay, another Christian pulled this on me. Well, at that time, they didn't know. God knew about it because he wrote about, yeah, you can have an abortion in the event of the life of the mother, or rape, or incest.
Well, it's a murder. That's all. And yeah, she's.
But God knew about it. That's what I'm saying is history. Well, you know, God didn't know history. Are you serious? No. Homosexuality, he already had that nailed. He knew about history and man and what man would do. Another Christian totally negated that God knew about history. I was like, no, he does. He does. So where in Scripture is there a penalty for a woman who aborts her own baby?
In the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill.
No. It's specific because Levitical code and Deuteronomy, Exodus, okay, all the Torah talks very specific about so many sexual things. God obviously knew about it, but he didn't write about it. Why did he not? I'm asking to scour the scripture for a penalty.
Well, you can tell I got to close things out from that. I'm sorry, but there you go. That's a project for folks listening out there tonight, well, or whatever part of the day is, because you're probably listening to this on the archive. And if you have some answers, send it to the Bard's Logic Political Talk contact page, which will send me a message, and I'll get that out to Cindy and to Kelly. And you can get there by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And thank you, Kelly and Cindy, for spending all the time with us tonight on the show. We look forward to Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, where we'll be having some folks calling from the Operation American Spring live from Washington, D.C., where we'll hear from Dan Gray, James Neighbors, and Colonel Riley. And so with that, definitely visit us at the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, as well as check out the Patriot Journalist Network on Twitter at www.patriotjournalist.com. And also, if you are a Twitter user, just put in listened to Bard's Logic and then copy and paste the link and put it in the message. And then if there's room, put the hashtag PJNet. So I will end tonight, as I do every night of the show, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. So we'll see you folks on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So good night, take care, and we'll see you then. Good night.
Bye, good night, everybody. Folks. Mm-hmm.